Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Morelia Python Radio, brought to you by Morelia Python Forums, www.moreliapythons.com, the best forum for Morelia and Carpet out there on the web. Tonight, we have what should be a really, really cool show, a lot of topics to hit on. It is the Morelia Roundtable. We're going to have, we have Zach Baez from Darkside Exotics, and we have Dave Kelly from Kelly Herpticulture. And they're going to be joining us in a little bit, and we're going to be talking about controversial topics in the world of Morelia and all our different thoughts,
opinions
and approaches to how we keep, to how we breed, the market, crossing, culling, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, just for good measure, we have to have the MIAI debate. So that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, a lot of cool things going on in the world of Morelia. But what's going on with you, Owen? Let's...
got baby tigers hatching. Now.
Very,
little guys.
Very cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've been excited to see these guys because they're... it's from a loan, a male that was on breeding loan to me from Jason Bailey, and it's an original line tiger crossed with my... lesser tiger female Trinity, and putting them together, they looked very similar in color and pattern, but he had stripes and she didn't. But she's a carry, like I guess her father had stripes, he was a tiger. So either way, I am expecting some good things, and I saw one of them poke more than just his nose out, and he had some stripes, so he or
cool.
she. We'll see.
Hey, I got a question. Yeah. I got a question about that.
Go ahead.
If you're talking about original line tiger, do you have to have a pairing to both to have the original line to call it the original line, or is just having one of the parents enough to make it the original line? Like how how would you approach outcrossing them?
Well,
and
I would say that
to call it
is,
original line.
Well, I said that here's the thing, that he's the original line tiger.
Right.
He's it, because he was from Jason Billings' original line. Mine are technically outcrossed tigers from the original line. So I'm
right.
not going to call them original line tigers. They are outcrossed tigers. They're tigers from the original line, not part of it. Does that make
sense?
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying, but like, how can you keep going with that, any line?
Well,
you
would breed it back into the line, is what you do.
Yeah, I know, but for the betterment of the snake and the genetics and all, wouldn't you want to outcross it?
Yes. I don't like breeding mothers to fathers or and all that crap. So I usually just I usually outcross, but then you can kind of come back in after a few generations is what you do to improve it. So
I mean I know how my approach was. I just was curious to see what your approach was, but very cool.
My approach is that I'm going to get some good-looking tigers, and, you know, I am probably going to keep a boy tiger to hold back, and that boy is going to be paired up with, you know, Nikita, my other tiger that I held back from last year, and that's going to be gorgeous tigers because it's going to be stripes, but the parents are completely unrelated to each other, so it's cool.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Very
but
cool.
We'll just see what the colors come out with these guys. So.
That's yeah, I know. I remember when I was at your place, I remember seeing that tiger, Jason's tiger. I kind of thought that I was kind of surprised at the size. It's kind of... Well, that could be because it was at your place and everything.
Monsters, yeah, I know.
Kind of looks like pygmy pythons when they're there.
Yeah.
No, but so. But cool stuff. Any other clutches you're waiting on?
Maybe Red Tiger.
Uh-huh.
Maybe if because she looks plump and she's been kind of plump since I got her, and I did see her lock up with Talon and my Red Tiger. So maybe she's got another week or two because she just shed, and then after that we're going to call it. But this is about the time. You remember last year my M-Pen female didn't lay till July.
Right.
Oh.
Huh.
Not over yet.
Not over yet. I know. We're, what, four months away from the start of the next breeding season?
isn't that freaking scary? I already have to sit down and draw up my plans.
Yeah.
Luckily, mine
are all drawn out until...
Shut up. Mine are all set.
I'm done until 2020, so I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, I have the... We keep adding stuff. Like, we're adding some more golds and more black-white lifts. So, see if those go well this year.
Cool. It seems like not a lot of people want to work with them because of their difficulty. I hope you have huge success with them and nail that species down because, you know, I think people...
It's so damn pretty.
Yeah, people would really appreciate... I got to be honest. I never really kind of took notice. They were okay. I mean, they were beautiful in pictures and such, but they weren't really a head-turner for me until I saw them in person. That iridescence... Mm-hmm. Oh man, really,
yeah.
Really, really sharp.
That's why I'm bringing a gold and a black with us to the Arboreal Symposium. I'm going to bring them with me. So,
the Arboreal Symposium. Yeah, don't forget about that. That's
yes,
all
I did. Yeah.
Second, third, and fourth. If you don't have your ticket, make sure you go over and snag a ticket. It's www.arborealsymposium.com. And it should be a good turnout for that event. But I think the biggest thing in the world of Moralia, I hope I don't butcher his name, but it's Frederick Averback. He had bowling eggs. He had his bowling female lay eggs. Yeah, he said that there was some complications. The egg laying process took 10 hours. 10 hours.
Holy crap.
He said the eggs were huge, and 2 hours after she left the eggs, and she was on the hunt for some food. So, I don't know if they can sense that the eggs are bad, or if they're no good, or, you know, she's just a bad mother. So, I really hope that those eggs go the distance for him, and it was. I think she was a 2006, and he's tried breeding her the last two seasons, and he finally has success. So that's three clutches in the last
three clutches
in the last two.
Yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah. So some
just
some
maybe.
And then what else did I see? I don't know if you saw the this was cool. Terry Brisland, he hatched out 75% diamond caramel zebras.
Jeez.
I'm curious to see what the diamond blood does to
75% diamond caramel zebra.
Well, it's a 75% diamond cross bred with a caramel zebra. So,
gotcha.
That's cool.
Why?
Why?
Just why? Just why? I mean,
we'll get into
that. I don't understand what you're going for.
I'm sure you're kind of trying to...
I have to say, see, I got all jazzed up on Mountain Dew, so I'm ready for this debate crap. So I got to save it for them.
Okay. So. Yeah.
All right.
I don't know if you saw the picture of, you know, Paul Harris from UK Pythons. He's been snapping some really awesome photos of snakes coming out of the eggs. Really, really cool stuff. But he had he hatched out a caramel granite, so that was pretty cool. And I saw a super caramel zebra jag that he hatched out the other day. And what else did I see? Oh, Casper, our good friend Casper Christian from Singular Reptiles. His scream jags hatched.
Yes, they did. He sent me messages about that.
Yeah, pretty badass.
Yeah, they look awesome.
So would you reconsider breeding a brettle to a jag because of those?
No. No.
No.
No.
Wouldn't do it.
No. Maybe if
happen.
It's like the end of the season, and think about it this way. Let's put it this way: if something were to befall my male brettle, and I could not replace it before the season, and my female is like ovulated, ready to go, maybe just because it'd be a waste of her.
I got you. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I think someone's coming to my house now to take my brettles. So.
Yeah. Speaking of brettles, I don't know if you saw Nick. He did the updated pic of the Stonewash brettle.
Stonewash,
Yeah, put that over on the NPR page as well, and I thought they were pretty neat. I'm not getting a whole lot of play. Nobody really cares, it seems. Brettles, man, what an underrated species. Just brettles in general.
The only way you can kill a brettle is if you throw a rock at it. I mean, did anybody think about that? Find me a brettle with an MRI, and I'll find you that's not really a brettle. I mean, they're hardy, they eat anything in sight, and they're calm as shit. I mean, my pair are housed together all the time, and it's feeding day, and I'll be feeding all around the room, and then I'll have forgotten that I need to separate them for feeding. I can still open their cage and hook one of them out without having, like, 8 foot of python come out looking for rat and teeth. Perfectly fine, perfectly calm, whatever. Try that with the IJs, and you got a granite IJ wrapped around your arm. I mean, try that with a jungle or a coastal, and you're in trouble. They're just chill. I love them. Great color, too.
I think part of the problem with brettles is people, they don't breed like a regular carpet from, I don't know. I'm only going by from what I'm told.
They do not.
You know, people maybe just tried to breed it like, you know, a coastal or something and didn't have success and kind of bailed on it or I don't know. But cool stuff. Go over, check out Mr. Mutton at Inland Reptiles. And I don't know if he's letting any of those go or what is the
other? I don't think so. I wouldn't.
You're worse of a hoarder than me. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think there's any worse of a hoarder than you. You're like, I hatched it. I love it. I must keep it. I'm like, you have 12 of them, but they're mine. All right, fine. I'm like, I had three female super caramel. I had two female super caramels and one male super caramel eat. I'm like, all right, five more and your asses are gone. I mean, like, come on. Now.
Oh, man.
The constant countdown to get the hell out. I mean.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're a successful snake breeder. You know?
Yeah. That's why I'm not on that show Hoarders. I get rid of mine quickly.
So, I guess the other, I don't know if I want to talk about this or not.
Why do we bring it up?
Why not? Let's throw it out there.
Right.
Exanic IJ.
What of it?
Did you hear the news of it?
No.
Oh, you didn't hear the news? Apparently.
No.
Apparently, Ollie from Precision Reptiles bred his, I guess, coastal line Exanic to the IJ Exanic. And they were compatible. Yeah.
Oh.
But,
so what does that mean?
Well, here's my question. And
yeah.
I think me and Nick are the only ones that have Hets in the States. I think.
Okay.
But I guess here's my question. You mm-hmm. might know this better than me, but first of all, is there a possibility that you can have an albino from one, like, let's take corn snakes.
Yeah.
Maybe let's take milk snakes and king snakes. Could you cross
easily,
a king
very
snake?
Closely related. Yeah.
King snake, albino, king snake with an
are you
albino.
Saying, are you saying that if I took a het albino, if I took an albino king snake and I took an albino milk snake, would I get albino babies?
Yes.
Ooh.
I know
one.
King snakes. I know king snakes and milk snakes are basically the same thing.
Very,
but
very closely related. Yeah.
Yeah. Like subspecies.
Yeah.
Here's my other question. I know that there put some question as to whether or not the IJ is pure, because it is related. However, what would happen
Well, I mean, the big question that comes in with me is that does that mean that the founder animals for the IJ Exanic were actually crosses?
Well, that's the theory that people are putting out there because of the fact that you can take an Exanic Coastal and you can take an Exanic IJ, breed them together and get Exanics. So there, someone, you know, the thinking is that somewhere down the line that you
don't bred an Exanic Coastal to IJs and then just threw more IJ blood in there.
Correct.
And that's
which
why
is,
they look different, but you can get that, like, we've talked about it before. High percentage jungle jags don't look like coastal jags.
Correct.
There's the subtle differences, but this is tricky.
So here's my other question. What about the fact that you have a ball python? And I think there's three different lines. I think there's VPI, there's Jolliffe line, and there's some other line. And none of them mm-hmm. are compatible. Does that mean that they're not ball pythons? Does that mean that a VPI ball python is not? You know what I'm saying? So, like, I can use the reverse argument.
We've had this discussion before, because remember, the two albino lines of retic are not compatible, white albino and normal albino. You breed them together, you get babies that are het for both white and normal albino. They're double hets.
Right.
I think if you were to breed an Exanic IJ to an Exanic Coastal, wouldn't you normally just get mutt babies that are double het?
Yeah, but I guess my thinking is too that you could possibly get You could. There's three possibilities. One, the possibility is that you don't get double hets, you don't get Exanics, so they're not compatible at all. And
right.
I guess if that was the case, then that would kind of seal the deal for everybody that they're not IJs. The IJ doesn't have coastal blood in it. But what I'm throwing back is that to me that really doesn't prove anything to me as far as I mean, it doesn't prove that it's still not related. It still can put some question in there just because they're not compatible. And then you have the other thing where they would make double hets. That still doesn't mean that there's not coastal blood in it, you know? And if they are compatible, that still doesn't mean that there's not coastal blood in it.
The problem is that we don't have any way to, like, say I were to breed coastal to coastal and get an albino. And now I have an albino that is pure coastal. It's got no Darwin blood in it at all. If I were to take that albino and cross to a pure Darwin albino and get albinos, that just tells me that every single morph in carpet python is compatible with all other – they all happen within each other and they're all compatible. But see, this is like a one of a kind, so you can't really compare it to anything else.
Yeah, so here's my thoughts on it. I mean, I know that the project is probably going to be hurt now because
people – yeah.
people are going to always question on whether they're pure or not. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned,
you don't care.
It's not that I don't care. I mean, I'm never going to pass it off as pure IJ. I'm going to say that this is the story, and you can make your own decision. If you think they're pure because this is the facts, then so be it. If you think they're not, then so be it as well. It's totally your call. However, that still doesn't – even if they were crosses with some of my projects that I have going on, I got to be honest, people aren't thinking about the idea that if you put IJ blood into albino, that it changes the way the albino looks. If you put IJ blood into a jag, it changes the way the jag looks. So the thinking is, if you put IJ blood into the exanic, it changes the way the exanic is going to look than maybe a normal coastal. Because if you look at the picture in the complete carpet python, it looks like it has a little more contrast, a little more it's just a little bit brighter than the exanic coastal. And I think that has to do with the fact that IJ blood is in there. So, you know, I don't know. It's kind of out there. It just was kind of disappointing that everybody was like, you know, ready just to, like, it was proven. Well, it wasn't proven, but this was what happened. And everybody kind of jumped on the whole, you know, then it must be a cross. And I don't know. I just wish people would make their own decisions and, you know.
That's
not
the way people go. The second something can't. Yeah, it's always a cross. So, yeah.
I guess I don't know if you have anything else if you want to hit on.
No, I'm pretty sure we're good. I mean, like, you know, that's the big news of the week.
Yeah. So I guess let's get this party going and get this get these guys on here and.
Oh, here we go.
Hey, welcome Zach.
I mean, yay!
Welcome Dave. How you guys doing?
Doing good. How you doing?
Okay. We're doing good. Congratulations on your clutch today, Zach. You're in it for the long haul now, man. There's no getting out now.
You're done. Over.
Yeah. It's funny. How did Howard put it? Oh, my carpet cherry has popped. So
yeah,
man, that's it.
Yeah,
I'm officially
the man now.
And you know, I'm pretty stoked and I'm very excited. And I'm glad that the female's okay. She's rocking it and she's healthy and everything. I was worried about her. And, I'm just MI, rocked. It was awesome. Just let it happen. And, you know, it wasn't the clutch was kind of a disaster clutch from the get-go. It was kind of, when I saw it being laid, I had my doubts about a lot of the eggs. They didn't have a lot of good veining. And you saw them. Their shells are, like, really pitted and cratered.
Oh.
A lot of windows and stuff. So, you know, the whole clutch was really kind of a disaster. So getting anything out of it was really exciting. So the fact that I got four snakes out of it, I'm pretty psyched. So I got what looks to be two tiger jags, a jag, and then a normal. And actually, the normal's my favorite.
Yeah, the normal was pretty cool. Yeah. I told Zach if he's letting that one go.
Yeah.
He's gonna go
with the
normal 5 minutes. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, it's been good.
Cool.
Been,
How about you,
been,
Dave?
Oh,
go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's just been an exciting week. So I had a lot of crazy stuff happen over here. So, been good, man. Been a good week.
Cool. cool. What about you, Dave? How's it going with you?
I'm just chilling in the snake room, geeking out. I'm really a Python's radio.
There you go. So the idea here is that one of the things that I wanted to do is, and one of the reasons that I picked you two guys is because we all kind of have different thoughts, different approaches to the way we keep and breed. And I thought it would be kind of cool to have a roundtable type discussion. We did this once before, and it seemed to be kind of cool. And We're just going to pick topics, go through them. I'll ask the question, they'll go around, they'll give their input, and we'll kind of debate it. And the whole idea is that I wanted to show the listeners that there's so many different trains of thought on how to keep and breed pythons and reptiles. And hopefully you listen, you take it in, you look and see what's going on inside your reptile room and what's going on with your snakes, and you make your own decisions. And, you know, I think that if people did that, that their success and, you know, their pleasure from keeping keeping reptiles would increase, because they would be more in tune with what's going on inside their room. Eugene Bissett once called it being a student of the serpent. So hopefully we can inspire some people and they can learn a thing or two from the four of us, and, you know, so be it. Yeah. So I think the biggest, and we're going to start with this one first. The biggest, most debatable, topic since Morelia Python's been on the radio is temperature. The whole approach to this flat line temperature of 80 degrees has been around for quite a while. Some people use it, some people do not, and everybody has their reasons of why they agree or disagree. You know, I just was curious to see what everybody thought on it. So basically the question is, you know, what is your approach and why, and do you think that the flat temp approach is good for long term? For breeding, I believe that it could be for keeping, but we're specifically talking for long-term continuous success with breeding. And Owen, you go first. What do you think?
Keeping the animals at 80 degrees? I think it could be used for long-term use, and it could be successful. Cause, I mean, we all know that Terry keeps everything at 80 degrees, and he's had success before. But where I would be hesitant is that you need to have your shit dialed in perfectly. I don't really subscribe to this method just because my snake room is in my basement, and my basement is a partially underground basement. Half of it's underground. The other half sticks out the back of the house. So the temperature fluctuates so much, it's very hard for me to get everything in there to be a constant 82. So I have heat panels and I have a space heater, and they're all programmed to keep the room close to 82, 83, in somewhere in that range. And they're in there to keep that room at that temperature, and they're all run by the computer systems. And, you know, they do give the snakes a little bit of a hot spot, especially if the room is getting a little too cold. And I've had success. So it all goes back to knowing what your limitations are and what you can do. I can't really do it where I'm at. I would like to try it. Hell, I would freaking love to not have that thing on my electric bill. But right now it's not in the cards. So, but I think
let me just add this in there. Also with this whole ambient flatline temp, when it applies to breeding, do you think that you need to cool carpet pythons for breeding?
Yes,
that's also tied into that question. So, see, if you approach the flatline temp, the idea is that you can keep them at this constant temp,
to cool.
And they do not need to cool.
Which that makes some sense. If you're at that temp, and that temp is at 82 temp, is they're like high, is within their range of being able to produce the sperm that the males need, as well as also the follicles that the girls need. You could get by without having to cool them. Other people in those situations are going to have to cool them. So it works for some, doesn't work for others. So, I, again, this is one of the other things. I would love to not have to cool. You know, it freaks me out every time. I don't like cooling. I'm always worried something's not going to come back from cooling. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Zach? What's your thoughts?
My thoughts. I guess I'll explain how I do it, and then I'll try to explain what I think about Terry's method, I guess, or the flatline method. What I do is pretty much everything above my belly button, in terms of on the rack or in the room, does not get heat. Nothing. Everything below gets heat. My room right now, I'm looking at thermostat right now, is 82 degrees. And that's about midpoint of the room, up the wall. Now, above that could get anywhere from 83, 84 during the day. But it can also get down to about 70, 78 at night. Now, everything below my belly button, below midpoint, gets heat tape or gets heat of some kind. Now, my females get radiant heat panels. They're on at 85 degrees. At the highest point that they could get to the heat panel is 85 degrees. And my rack with my young ones I've grown up, they get an 85-degree hot spot or warm spot, as you could call it. And that's how I run it. I always find it, the flat line test, does it work? Yes, because right now I have two males that have been, since breeding season, on flat line temp, no heat, no anything for many months now. They're rocking it, eating fine, pooping fine, everything else. My chondros do great at flat line temps. So, yes, it can work. The key is to make sure that your room is set up in order to do it and that you watch and see what the animals are doing. So, you know, it's not, don't set it and forget it. You know, you got to set it and you got to pay attention to what's going on. The reason why I kept heat on a lot of things is because, frankly, wanting to go into that method and be a little bit hesitant and slowly kind of acclimating my animals to that temperature, I think it's something that a lot of people miss. A lot of people just shut off all the heat, and then they wonder why they have problems. We always have to try to slowly get them in there. So when I first found out, I was having all my heat tape at 88, or all my heat panels at 88, lower that down to 87, lower that down to 86, now it's at 85. Do I think it's needed for breeding cooling? No. I do not think cooling is needed for breeding. I think it's the easiest thing to change, and that's why it's the easiest thing to get those animals to cycle. I think that food, I think that barometric pressures, I think that water and weather, I think a mate availability, and I also think the temperature all play a part in whether or not a snake is going to cycle or not. Now, the easiest thing to switch there is temperature. So let's say if you want to be consistent and you say, all right, this is what I'm going to do every breed season, this is how I'm going to do it, the easiest thing to change is temperature. I know that Terry uses food, so the way he cycles is by not feeding and then feeding heavily again, and then that's how he gets his girls to cycle. And that works because, you know, he's had success. But let's say one fall you're going to pump them full of food and the female doesn't want to eat or the female refuses. So you're having a lot more variables there to deal with than just turning the temperature down or up. So that's why I think it's a little bit tougher to do it that way. I think the easiest way is to mess with temperature. But I don't think it's necessary. It also depends on species as well. I know chondros don't need a temp drop at all, really. IJs barely. So, you know, every snake really has its own kind of quirks on, you know, what triggers it, you know, how sensitive it is to those types of things. And just knowing what it is, that's the way to do it. You know, try. Whatever works, keep doing that. If you're having problems, then switch it up. That's it. That's my piece.
Okay, very cool. How about you, Dave? What say you?
I've been keeping my animals since November on the 80-degree flat method, and I am now currently in the process of actually switching back to heat. I'm going to be riding the seasons instead, just because I do feel like, as Zach already kind of touched on this, temperature is a very big motivator for breeding. I think kind of having that cool down to the winter period and then warm up into the spring period, just kind of like a natural dial into when the temperatures are right and when the conditions are right to breed. And I think it kind of pushes them more than anything else. I was going to try food cycling under the Terry Phillip method this year, but my biggest problem is I just felt like I was manipulating the snakes when I wanted them to breed as opposed to when they would. So I'm instead going to be just letting the room get down to what it is, whatever it turns goes to. I'm taking away my room heater to let it get down to whatever the outside temperature is, and I'm going to have leave heat panels in the cages so the animals can thermoregulate and choose what they want to be, choose where they want to go in the cage, and ultimately let them choose what temperature, when they want to breed, that kind of thing.
Okay. So I think, I kind of have a couple points as far as this goes. In 2012, I pretty much followed the, I don't want to say basic type of temperature regimen, but I provided a hotspot. The hotspot basically was 85 degrees. Not in breeding season, it was 12 hours on, 12 hours off. When the room would cool down at night, it would get probably as low as maybe 75 at the lowest. So basically you're looking at an ambient average daily temperature of about 80 degrees. One of the things that I do is I keep the warmer species at the top of my room and the cooler, more temperate species at the lower part of my racks or in my room. So, for instance, my IJs Darwins are at the top, and my Brettles and Diamonds are at the bottom of the racks and stuff. And I even put the Diamond Crosses in there. I don't know if that plays a factor, if that Diamond Blood in there makes them more like Diamond Pythons, you know. But I just keep them there for just for the fact that they're a little bit cooler. The coastals and jungles, they sort of sit in the middle. And that's kind of how I approach that. So when I come into breeding season, what I'm doing is I'm allowing them to the temperature never really changes. What changes is the nighttime temperature drops. And what I did was I allowed the temperature to gradually come down until I hit 70 degrees at night. Once I kept it there for a couple weeks, I gradually brought it back up. So what was happening is my light cycle and my temperature cycle was shortening week by week. And I pretty much followed the seasons, and I had success. I had no respiratory infections or anything like that, because I believe that they were able to get back up to temperature in the to get their body core temperature up during the daytime, where the heat was allowed them. This year, though, I changed that. And I've had the worst, again, I'm three seasons in, and this is by far the worst season that I've had. Number one, I don't think that the snakes were fed enough. So I don't necessarily think that it relies solely on temperature. Number two, I don't think that some of the females were old enough. But I do believe that the ones that I've had egg binding, which was bad. I've had an entire clutch of slugs. I've had a carpet lay one egg. and I've had the one that was egg bound. I don't know if the eggs are good or not. I mean, they're in there. They're about to hatch any day, but I really don't know on whether they're good or not. So a couple things that I've learned from that is that I think that what people are forgetting with temperature is the fact that with that temperature, it releases hormones in the snake. And I think that those hormones are needed for certain bodily functions, let's say, like breeding. And I think it's not necessarily just you guys are right that it's not absolutely temperature dependent. But
right.
I think that there's more keys to it, and there's other things as barometric pressure or whatever. I don't know if everybody's bad seasons this year. It seems like carpet breeders are having a hard way to go. I don't know if a lot of people have tried to approach that flatline temperature type of regimen. But I'm going back to what worked for me. And one of the
mm-hmm.
things that I was talking to Chris Salamani, and he was telling me that he knows a vet in he's in PA and he keeps snakes and he is also a reptile vet, and he was saying that that method is very bad and causes major thyroid issues in snakes, and you know, talking to Josh about it, the thyroid is strongly influenced by hormones, and that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which in snakes is strongly influenced by seasonal activity. So, you know, I don't know. I think that you can keep pythons at that temperature. I think that you
mm-hmm.
will have them, and they'll live and shed and eat and et cetera, et cetera. I think, though, for long-term successful breeding year after year after year, if you're a breeder, I think that you're going to have a hard time approaching it from that way. That's my thought. Anybody else want
okay.
to chime back in on that?
No, I agree with you. It's going to be – it's not just one factor. It might be one factor for your animal, your snake, your situation. And that's why everybody has their own all of us have our own breeding recipes that get us all to the same damn result, eggs. No one does it the same way. So it is going to be a different thing. And it, like what we said before, it's what works for you. And, Derek, you found that this method doesn't work for you. So now you're going back to your previous method that did work. I'm a very big proponent of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If you're getting eggs, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So.
And again, that's not to say that people can't have success doing it that method. I mean,
You totally can. That's all you. If you do that, more power to you, because I can't do it. So, yeah.
Any other thoughts, guys? Zach? Dave?
Actually, there's a little story I read in an old book called The Reproductive Husbandry of Boas and Pythons that kind of helped push me back towards going to seasonal temperatures. There was an account of a zoo that was trying to breed white-lip pythons, and they were keeping them...
I'm listening.
they were keeping them with a hot spot between 88 and 92 during the day, and they weren't letting them go below 75, 80 degrees. Well, the only time they ever got them to breed, according to this account, is when the heat went out and they went down into the 60s. And they finally got successful copulation, and I need to reread the book. I don't know if they got fertile eggs, but that was the only time they were getting successful copulations. And that just kind of told me right then and there that we might be missing more of are you missing breeding activity or missing out on something if we don't let our snakes choose what temperatures they are subjected to. So, I don't know.
I think part of the fear that everybody has is they want to avoid respiratory infections. And I think that people, I could be wrong, but I used to subscribe to the misconception that respiratory infection has to do with temperature. I don't think it has to do with temperature as much as it has to do with stress.
Yep.
Breeding season is very stressful. All those, the bacteria is there and present all the time. I think that what happens is you just, you know, the snake is stressed, its system is suppressed, and it's much easier for that bacteria to take hold over the snake, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the fact that, you know, you're not, that people don't allow the snake to warm its body back up during the day if they're going to leave it cold at night. You know, I think Zach, you hit on a point too, that it has to be a gradual thing. I think that people just switch off yeah. their heat and call it a day. I think mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's not good for the snake either. I think it has to be a gradual thing. But, you know, I think that people need to pay attention. You know, I go back to the student of the serpent type of thing, and I think people need to pay attention what's going on. The snake is kind of going to tell you what it wants or what it needs. You just have to be paying attention to what those signs and cues are, and you'll be able to figure it out. And hopefully, you know, dial it in. But I think yeah. the fact that people just take a breeding recipe and think that they can apply it to, you know, to somewhere else in somebody else's room, I think that there's a lot of factors at play that people aren't taking into consideration. And then when that doesn't work, you know, they're not trying to figure out why it's not working, you know. So.
Right.
Hmm. Any other points you guys are thinking as far as do you think that you'd be able to have consistent success with just keeping it at the flat temperatures?
Yes. I say yes if and only if you're able to take every other trigger that is out there and put it into play. I think if you just say, I'm going to leave everything flat, leave the room as is, don't change a thing, you're not going to get success, or you might get some. I think if you take things like light cycles, nobody ever talks about light cycles, which bugs me the hell out, because the freaking sun is the most, you know, powerful force in the world, and yet nobody ever talks about it for python breeding. How light cycles do play a huge in other part, yet nobody talks about it. Everybody keeps their snakes in basements, probably. You know, that's probably half the reason. But light cycles play, I think, as big of a part. When I drop my temps, which I didn't drop real low or anything, I dropped them the lowest. It got me 72, maybe spiked down to 70 at one point, maybe a day or two. And I was playing with light cycles like crazy. My light cycles and how long the heat was on was down to maybe 4 hours a day. So the snake was getting light and heat for only 4 hours a day, or supplemental heat. The room was ready; it was already heated. So my point is that there's many ways to go about cycling an animal. We're choosing to use temperature, but I think that if somebody studied and did and put the work in, I think people could figure out other ways to cycle animals that doesn't have to do with temperature. So right now, I think the easiest way to get consistent success is by dropping temperature. But I don't think that is 100% needed, especially for snakes like, I mean, chondros and equatorial snakes like that. I don't know, man. You know, you have snakes that don't have seasons. You know, how do you tell it, okay, this is a season, when it's like, wait a minute, I've never had a season for a million years. So, yet they have a wet and dry season. But nobody ever simulates a wet and dry season in their chondro cage, do they? I don't really hear about it. I don't hear anybody putting their chondro in the rain chamber. I don't hear about that. Could that work? I think so. So I think that there's many different reasons or many different ways of doing it. So, I don't know. I don't like to talk indefinite. You know what I mean? I don't like to say that if you don't drop, you're not going to get consistent success, because I'm guaranteed there's got to be guys out there who are doing it. So, you know, so I can't. So I can't agree with that statement. You know what I mean? That's the only thing. But I understand exactly where you guys are coming from. I understand exactly where you guys are coming from. If you're not going to do anything else, you know, and you're just going to mess with temperatures, then yes. You need to drop some sort of temperature. You need to tell that snake it's ready. It's time to breed. And the easiest way to do that is with temperature. That's it.
Right. Okay. I think we hit on some good points with that one. Now, this next one is often comes up in the carpet python world. Crossing.
Oh, yeah.
really good.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let me give a little introduction to this. I think you have we've talked about this before in the show. Carpet pythons kind of as a complex are kind of can be confusing, intimidating. People don't understand because they may be coming from the ball python world or maybe corn snake world or, you know, something similar where you can breed a exanic pied, you know, bumblebee to a, you know, pastel sugar. And at the end of the day, everything that you hatch out is still going to be a ball python. Carpet pythons, that's a little bit different. And I know that this you have three trains of thought out there in the world. You have the people that are anti-cross, you can't do it, don't cross the subspecies ever. Then you have some of the guys that kind of ride the fence that sort of say, well, if these carpets breed in the wild, then I think it's okay, but there's certain ones that I would not do it with. And then you have guys that just are, you know, breeding it to anything that has a cloaca. And we'll
the
try
the swishy gourd kind of deal, yeah.
And I think this is kind of a tough one for people because I think at the end of the day, what you're left with is you're hoping that when you sell a snake to somebody that you're going to you representing it to the best that you can, and you're saying that this is, you know, a cross of some sort. And I think it was actually on Morelia Python Forum the other day, or there was a thread that said, what is this? It wasn't an IJ cross. Was it a, who knows what it was. So, and I guess without any proper lineage, you really don't know what it is. So I guess the question is are you, how do you feel about the whole cross thing? And are you pro-morph or are you anti-morph? Because that's really what it comes down to. Go ahead, Owen.
I have actually switched my opinion recently about these things. I will pause now for gasping as well as dramatic effect. I believe I have now allowed enough time for people to get off the floor. Anyway, from looking at the market, it is such a morph-driven market, it is ridiculous to the point of insanity, to the point that, you know, we lose localities. And we've altered the entire jungle species to become what it is because we're that morph-driven. But, I mean, I don't know if you guys realize that. So
how do you mean?
Unfortunately, well, yeah, what does a wild jungle look like?
Yeah, but a jungle's
not like our jungles. So we are so morph driven to having, not morph driven, that color pattern, whatever, to have an appealing animal. We're so driven as that to be breeders that we've altered the jungles to becoming these black and yellow animals that they are. And I mean, I don't know about you guys. When I first saw a wild-type jungle, I didn't believe it. It's like, that's a coastal. It's like, no, it's a jungle. Like, that's not true. And then through further research, like, oh, holy shit. So the fact that that's what customers want. They want something flashy, something good, something really, really good-looking. And as much as we may appreciate every single green-tipped carpet python that comes out of an egg that we hatched, other people aren't. So, unfortunately, is that you have to have the growth of the morph market. And the way you really allow the morph market to grow to its fullest potential is you have to have crossings and intermixings. We as breeders have something that no other market has. We have 3, 4, 5 different subspecies that have their own inherent morphs that can be crossed in with other things to make some very, very unique animals. Color-wise can be altered, pattern can be altered, morph can be altered.
It's you don't find that in retake. You barely find it in boa. If you find it in boa, they all start getting huffy about intermixing of lines with that stuff. It's really very interesting that you can have something that is a super caramel zebra jack, and you have it, and you can sell that, and you know whoever you sell it to is going to represent it as a super caramel zebra jack. And as long as the person who's buying it knows where each one of those morphs originally started, they know what's in that animal. The dark side and the bottom part of it is that you are still going to get those normal-looking mutts. Now, part of me says that I don't really like culling animals that are feeding and healthy and whatever and would make a great pet, a great starter. But the other part is that if somebody buys it from me and goes to resell it, they're going to just sell it as a carpet python. But it's like the knowledge, you know, if I, Dave, are you going to run to a dealer and pick up what he thinks is an IJ and automatically call it an IJ? No, you're not, because you don't have no idea where it came from. So you don't trust the people who aren't the breeders. That's where the stigma should come in. But I think there needs to be a morph market, and there needs to be the expanding and the exploration of the morph market as well as to see what's going on. I have right now 2 mutts, which I never thought I'd even get freaking one. So I have my ivory jungle diamond jag, and I have my jaghead granite. The jaghead granites, because I want granite jags. I think they look gorgeous, and I would love to have those. And then the ivory diamond jag is just because she's white. She's a white jaguar, and I would love to see what I can do with that to try to keep, I want an adult all-white jag. I want that color of a jag to be white. I think that would be badass. And now I have something to play with. I have something that I can maybe work it with. So, yeah. I've been hanging out there too much, so. I definitely believe that there needs to be a morph market and that there needs to be expansion within the morph market, but there needs to be it needs to be done responsibly. Don't take everybody at their word. Don't walk over just because you see carpet at some guy's table and automatically assume it's coastal. Do your research, know what you're looking at, know what you're doing for. And make your own decision of what to do with the siblings. I'm not going to tell you what to do with your own snakes. If you want to feed it to a cobra, cool, knock yourself out. If you want to sell it as, you know, if you're going to sell it, cool, just make sure you sell it as what it is. The big thing, and this, I was talking to several people about this week, because the main dilemma I'm going through is what is a super caramel and what is just a really good-looking caramel? And I would much rather sell a super caramel for the price of a normal caramel than to run the risk of misrepresenting one of my animals. I would rather have somebody call me and go, dude, I totally screwed you. I paid $200 for this super caramel. It's breeding like crazy. I'm getting awesome babies. I'd be like, good for you. Than have somebody call me and say that they spent $700 on a super caramel, and it's not that. So.
Okay. Zach, what say you?
Oh, man.
He's still taken aback. Give him a minute.
No. I'm trying to figure out how to say this without coming off as a complete asshole or something
like
that.
Do it. No, Derek, I come off as an asshole all the time. I come off as an asshole all the time. It's okay. Just do it. All
right. So, essentially, I don't give a damn what you do in your room. I don't care if you want to breed a chondro to a retic. I don't care.
Oh.
I don't care.
Oh, God, it hurts.
I don't care if you want to breed subspecies to a monkey, to an elephant. Dude, whatever the hell you do, that's your business. But don't go pissing in the pool. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if you're going to do it. Represent it correctly. But at the same time, we cannot idiot-proof the freaking industry. We can't do it. So if a guy, Joe Schmo, comes to wherever, Hamburg, White Plains, wherever, and sees some kind of integrated thing on a table from a jobber, and they tell him it's X, Y, and Z, and he takes it and believes it and takes it home and breeds it to whatever. We can't be responsible for that idiot. See what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
I can't be responsible for that guy. That guy, we can't idiot-proof anything. So just like you can't idiot-proof if you sell a snake to somebody and he doesn't know what the hell he does with it and kills it, you really can't, you can't do that. So you do the best you can and just do you. That's it. I care about what's in my room. That's it. What my projects are mine. Then again, I'm also coming at it from a different view. I'm coming at it as this is literally my hobby. I care about what I care about. I don't care if I don't sell a thing. I don't care. Because this is what I like. I like locality conjurers. I'll take an Aru over, you know, one of those high blues any day of the week just because that's what I like and that's what I work with. So I guess what I'm trying to say is cross, not cross, whatever. Personally, I know Eric and Dave know this. I want a colon. Yeah, I want a carpet bowling. I want a pet. Yes, I know, right? Blasphemy. I've been wanting one for a pet for the last 6 months. I would kill to own one, right? I named it Darth Vader, and I put it in a big cage in my room, and I would love that shit to death. And you know
what? Different.
That's cool. My point is what I want to do does not affect you or should affect you. If you want pure specimens, there are people out there who are breeding pure and are doing lineages. Go find that. If not, hey, man, whatever, it is what it is. Now, do people feel like we're losing those guys who are keeping the stuff pure? Yeah. I mean, we lost you, Owen. So I guess it's a double-edged sword, right? Because we want to say that there's going to be enough people out there who are going to be breeding pure, and there's going to be enough people out there who are going to be doing mixes so everybody could be happy, but we don't really know what's going to happen in the future. Luckily, I feel like I'm in a place now in my hobby where I can have what I want, and I know I have animals that have lineages. Is that going to be the case in 20 years? I don't know, man. I don't know. Probably not. We can only do so much. That's my biggest point. We can only do so much. That's it.
Okay. Good point. Dave, what say you?
Oh, the mecca of all debates. I'm an on the fencer. I own a lot of jungle diamond crosses. You know, I'm one of those assholes. But I want to breed them. I want to mix them up. I love mine, but at the same time, I kind of do feel bad for what I'm doing to the purists in a way. But it's a hobby, man. We're breeding snakes in boxes. They're just snakes in boxes, and we're fighting over it for some reason.
Yep.
Doesn't really make sense when you come down to it, especially for a species like carpet pythons, where there's been no real taxonomic work done. And what we do know will probably change next year.
Yep.
You know, five years ago, we thought a jungle and a coastal were different. Well, guess not. I guess what I'm trying to say is you should just go and do what you want to do, but do it the right way. Represent your animals properly. If you're hardcore, do lineage charts. You know, do what the Chondro guys do. You can buy a designer animal with like 17 different localities all on one piece of paper, and you can look back at and reference. But don't shame one side or the other. Did I go too crazy on you?
No. You hit on some of the points that I was going to hit on. I guess I would be the guy that would be considered the mixer out of all four of us. Here's my thought. I think, number one, I'm an on-the-fence guy. I like cool-looking carpet pythons. That's, at the end of the day, that's what I like. I really like some of the crosses out there because they look cool. Other ones, they don't. I mean, for some reason, if I approach another species, I don't really care about morphs. it doesn't really matter to me. I don't know. Even with a ball python, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I'll just use this as an example. I don't know, man. There's just something about, I remember when I was a kid, that a normal ball python just kind of, it looks cool. And it was hard to get when I was a young guy. It was like almost like, you know, one of those unattainable species. Now they're like, you know, they're cobra food. Who cares about it if it's not, you know, some kind of special super-duper 15-gene animal? I think that the guys that continue to keep their stock pure, I think that the herp market is something that changes,
mm-hmm.
and I think it changes all the time. I think you're going to have some times where the morphs are the big thing, and other times where people want to get more into just the normal species. So I think if it turns back around where people want a pure coastal, I think that you actually, the guys that keep their stock pure will make out better because they're the only ones that have it. You know, I mean, and they can document that they have it. So if you're looking for a pure coastal, there's only a few people you can go to. I have both projects. I have projects that I will never breed a morph to because to me, locality jungles, I'll never cross them with anything because to me, that's what makes them cool is the fact that they're locality jungles. I don't want to make it brighter. I don't want to make it, that's what is cool about that carpet to me. And you know what? Maybe your average person at a show that's walking through won't give two craps about it. But mm-hmm. if you get somebody in with, and here's the other point, is that unfortunately, it seems that the herp market today is all about morphs. And mm-hmm. I think that you have this double-edged sword to where if you want to get people interested in carpet pythons or Morelia, you have to give them something that's going to grab their attention. And otherwise, they're not going to care. Or they might not give it a chance. I think one of the cool things that people often forget, not so much what the snake looks like, but what are some of the cool behaviors that it does? What are, like, you know, some interesting facts about this, where it comes from, what it does in the wild, or any of those various type of things that could make this snake cool that, you know, not necessarily the paint job. Now, don't get me wrong. Like I said before, I have a lot of projects with a lot of high-end type of carpet morphs. But for some reason, carpet pythons are my favorite type of python. I love them all. I dig the whole complex. But I got to agree, Dave, that's my whole thing is it's a snake in a box. If somebody comes along and tells me that, you know, if all of a sudden that all carpet pythons, they're really just the same. At one point they were. Somebody did some taxonomical thing and somebody said, you know what, these are all variegata except for this one and this one. And everything else is goes under that. And that's what one guy said. And then another guy came along and said, I think that these should be subspecies. And now we're at the point, just like you just said, that jungles and coastals are basically the same thing. So we change just because somebody said that's what they are. You know, I mean, you got to do you, man. So if that's what you like and that's what's going to get you fired up about keeping snakes, then do it. Right. You know, personally, I would never cross species. So you'll never see me breeding a carpet to a chondro. You'll never see me breeding a woma to a ball python. That's just a line that just doesn't – I don't understand why you're doing it. To me, and this is just my opinion, it doesn't make the snake look any cooler. Sometimes it looks like it's freakier, you know. Maybe it gives it a wild paint job or something like that. But I would almost challenge you to make that same type of paint job with selected breeding. You know what I mean? And I'm sure it could be done to a certain extent. And I think there's so much that could be done in the world of carpet pythons with selective breeding. And I think that people should pay attention to that as much as they pay attention to the morphs. But, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. So I think that people should just do what they think is right. I think that, you know, you guys hit a lot on the representing your project correctly. I think that the lineage info is pretty much spot on. But I guess at the other point is that, you know, you're saying that this animal is pure based on what somebody told you.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just call a spade a spade. I mean, when money's at play, what happens? You know, if I'm in Australia and I'm looking for this, I don't know. If I'm looking for an imbricata for you and yours hunted down, and, you know, I say, man, I really would pay top dollar for an imbricata. And you say, okay, can't find one. Well, I guess this is going to be an imbricata. What the hell do I know? I've never seen one in the wild. Have you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So what do I know what to look for? I mean, I've seen it in books, but I don't have enough knowledge, and nor do I think that anybody outside of Australia would really have that expertise. Have you ever seen one in real life? I haven't. So what do I know what I'm looking for? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody
mm-hmm.
comes and puts a snake in front of me and says, oh, here you go, here's your imbricata, I'm just going to go, okay, imbricata, breed it. 4 years, 5 years from now, I'm going to be selling it. Here's imbricata. In reality, maybe it's not. You know, I know that's kind of that's just an example of how something could go. But, again, it's just a snake in a box, and you're going by somebody else's word of mouth, you know. And you just have to trust the person that you're dealing with. I mean, I'm sure you guys have played Whisper Down the Lane, you know, at when you were a kid, and how when the story starts at the one end and how it ends up at the other end is totally different. So we're going by years and years of people, you know, working with these pythons and just going by what they told us, you know.
Right.
So if you believe them, you believe them, and you call your stuff pure. If you don't, then you don't, you know. So that's my 2 cents. Anything else? Anything else you guys want to
learn? That was kind of my inspiration behind the lineage charts. I kind of got fed up with trying to figure out. You know it's a coastal. You think it's a coastal. You've been told it's a coastal, but you can't convince everybody. So by having the lineage chart, I can just lay it down and say, here's this animal. Here's the ancestry I was told back as far as I could go. You can look at that and make up your own mind. If it's not a coastal, walk away. If that's good enough for you, awesome. You just got a coastal. Enjoy it. But I don't know. Just I think having all that in front of you and being able to make up your own mind is the way to go.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome idea that, you know, we brought. Actually, I think you were one of the first ones that you and Zach were one of the first ones that did that whole lineage thing. And I think the Chondro guys kind of got it right. I mean,
they did.
Oh, yeah. They got it right from the get-go, man. My goodness. You learn a lot from them, man.
Yeah, and I think if you apply some of those, you know, concepts that they use, I think maybe, you know, we'd have a lot less arguing and a lot, you know, I just don't understand why somebody would just want, you know, I think what pisses me off the most about anything when it comes to this type of topic is the fact that somebody will go and post up what they think is a coastal carpet python. And sure enough, here comes the army. Dun, 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 dun.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you just came into the carpet python world, but guess what? You asshole, that's not really real. You know what I mean? Hey, welcome. How you doing? You know, hey, that's a good way to welcome a new person into your community, man. And it's blasted all over the internet. It's blasted all over Facebook. Listen, you douchebag, stop being an asshole about it and PM them and maybe give them some education, rather than being assholes just straight out there on the forum. No wonder people are like, well, I don't want to deal with these freaking idiots. You know what I mean? That's just not a cool way to do it. That's Ball Python
Hell
way.
No.
Excuse
I
me,
love
Ball
it
Python.
When you get fired up like this. God,
yo,
the whole show.
Excuse me, Ball Python people. Excuse me, Ball Python either. I don't mean to insult you that way, but what I'm saying
no,
is
it's too late. It's done. It
one
happened.
Of the reasons that I stayed out of the Ball Python gig is the fact that there's too much bullshit going on in the thing. And one of the things that attracted me to the whole world of Morelia was the fact that there was no bullshit. But the more and more I see, bullshit coming up, and it just pisses me off that, you know, people just can't be happy that somebody has a freaking nice-ass snake in a box. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I get why you want to...
Let the hate flow through you.
Yeah. Wait, hold on.
You underestimate the power of the dark side.
Good job. Good job.
But... I don't know. That really just irks me when people do that, man. But anyway, okay. Go ahead.
You shouldn't. It's better to educate.
Well, I have a question.
Go for it.
What do you think about type? About
what?
How the Chondro guys do it. They call. And Eru, they don't have documented, you know, lineage on. But everything about it says it's an Eru. It looks like an Eru, you know. You know, everything about it is Eru, but they don't have any lineage to trace it all the way back to Eru Island. They call it Eru type. Do you think that's ever going to be something that's going to be a part of the carpet community, or do you think that even should be a part of the carpet community, or do you think it's just going to complicate things further? Like, let's say I go to, I don't know, a reptile show, I see an IJ, everything I see about it says it's an IJ. The guy says, yeah, it's an IJ. And I buy it. I haven't done that, but let's say I had. And I called it IJ type. Do you think that's a problem?
Well,
you're still going to fall the same problems because, you know, I've seen chondros and I've seen scrubs and things like that at reptile shows. And it's never the person who's behind the table that works with the species and knows the species is the one you got to worry about. It's the guys who have, you know, the turtles that just came out of a crate from wherever the hell, they're the ones
right.
who are just going to be it. Like, it looks like a duck. It acts like a duck. Guess what it is? It's a duck. I mean, and that's your big problem is they don't ever care. I've seen one of the big things is that Chris and I go through with the scrub pythons is one of our Arus was sent to us as a Maruki. It is nowhere near the same kind of physical attributes of Maruki. It's an Aru. It's a freaking Aru. But it looked like a Maruki. It acted like a Maruki. It had the same kind of a pattern like a Maruki. Must be a Maruki. So that's
right,
when you start running
right.
into issues with that. So now if you were to take something that says jungle-like or jungle-type and sell it and somebody buys it, what's the first word they hear? Jungle. And that's all they're going to
yep.
go buy.
Yep.
And that's
good.
That,
no,
that will get that like. Will get lost so quick, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
I think, though...
But see, that's the difference in the Chondro community, that... See, they're dealing with a whole different animal.
You are. And that's... Each individual complex is so weird like that.
Yeah,
it just is set up that different.
I think, though...
I think
the good... Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say that I think that the Chondros as a species itself kind of weeds that type of business out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of weeds
yeah.
that kind of a kid with $100 in his pocket picking up a Chondro. That's not going to happen. Kid with $100 in his pocket can pick up a carpet. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that's why, like, personally, I like the idea of type, right? That whole mindset of it makes a lot of sense, saying that this is, I don't know if it's pure enough, but it's everything about it says it's this, but I can't really prove it. I like the idea because it allows people a little more freedom to do things. But the problem is with that is because it's so easy for somebody to say, oh, this is an IJ type, sell it to some kid for $100. That kid says, it's an IJ, and now it's a pure IJ, and the type is, you know, brushed away, and let's see how that's going to be a problem. But I agree. I would like it to work, but I know it can never work. It can never work.
I think one of the things that people have to, you know, if anything else you take from anything we say on the show or any of the guests or anything, you got to do your research first, man. Just don't go and buy a snake on a whim. But the only unfortunate side to that is that there's not there's breeders out there that are just about making the dollar, and they want to sell it, so they're going to sell it as fast they can. I think of, you know, oh, I remember when we were at Hamburg this past time, we had the people come up and remember they're coming from a corn snake to a carpet python, and they wanted to get into Moralia, and, you know, they wanted to go straight to a chondra. Right.
Yeah.
So one of the things
like what's actually is that chondro is so different. Why it works, why stuff works with chondro is chondro can't get out of its own way with its stigmas. They're hard to keep. They're flighty. They're mean. They die on a whim. So not a lot of people are getting ready to spend a crap ton of money on them unless they've done their research. Then they do their research and then they realize what they're getting themselves into. So the fact that some people are scared shitless by chondros ends up helping them in the long run sometimes.
True. But I think, you know, the thing that obviously if we would have had, well, we didn't have a chondro at the table at the time. So,
no,
I mean, this isn't 100%. But what I could say is that when that person approached, both of our reaction was is that, whoa. You don't want to get a chondro. You don't want to go and buy a chondro.
Hmm.
Wet your feet with a carpet python first. And it's not because I'm selling a carpet python, but the whole idea is that, you know, carpet pythons are a little more forgiving in the world of Morelia, okay? Chondros, scrub pythons, now you're looking at something that's a little bit, it's not that they're harder to keep, but they're a little bit not as forgiving with, you know, keeper error, so to speak. So if you've never experienced keeping a python at all and you're coming from a corn snake and you want to jump all the way up to the top, I mean, that's kind of, to me, that's a mistake. And ultimately what's going to happen is that person is going to be frustrated and they're going to not want to deal with them at all. So, again, but there's breeders out there that if they had the chondro and they had the carpet on the table, I'm going to make $500 selling this chondro or I'm going to make $100 selling this coastal. I'm selling you the chondro, you know.
Yeah,
and that's a shame.
Go over there,
like
they'll set you over cages. Yeah, well, the thing is, that guy, I remember that person, and it was the, you ask people a certain amount of questions to know whether or not they're ready to have an animal that's on the table. And some of the monitor people I know with some of their certain species, like some of their water monitors and ornate monitors, they won't sell to anybody who doesn't know the scientific, who doesn't know the Latin. Because if you know the Latin, it means you studied the species. If you were just like, clearly a giant freaking lizard, no, go away. So obviously you can test those people to know if they're prepared. Because I'm asking them, what do you really like about the contours? Like their color and the fact they sit on a branch. I'm like, okay, you've seen pictures of them.
Right.
Good job. You ever held one before? No. You ever held a carpet python before? No. Okay, here's a carpet python. Don't break it. I mean, it's one of those things of you're not prepared. That's great. You've taken the first step, but now you're trying to jump to step, 40, where there's a lot of other steps in between. And you talked about how he could modify a tank. I'm like, the tank should already be modified. You should. I'll admit, when I was getting into carpet pythons for the first time, there were days where I went to the show and I ended up coming home and be like, well, shit, now I need to go to Target and buy a new bin or a cage or whatever in order for this thing to be kept. I mean, now I got empty cages. I know where to put things. I know what's going on. So, you know, you always should have an idea of what you're doing and where the animal can go when it gets home. So that, again, shows me that you're putting forth the effort. Again, not ready for a snake that I'm even cautious about fiddling with. So,
I don't think that necessarily chondros are hard to keep or are difficult. I just think that they're a little more, well, I think that they're more difficult to keep than a corn snake. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Corn snake's another one. They're very forgiving. They're from here. They don't care.
Right. I'm just saying that there's certain temperature regimen. You have the whole, you know, you can't approach feeding that way. You know, it's just a lot of stuff to learn. I guess my point was, as though, and we kind of got off topic and started talking about something else, is that the whole type thing, I think that that's good as far as when you're coming from the breeder standpoint, because you're representing
right.
your animal as best as you can. You're not saying that this is something that it's not. What happens after the fact, that's after the fact. I think that the Chondro
right.
people and the Chondro community, they kind of have that part of it down, and I think that the carpet community could learn a thing or two from them and their approach to doing that. Because it seems like, and I'm sure that they have their debates and, you know, their heated
mm-hmm.
discussions, et cetera, as far as all that goes. But I just think that when it comes to the approach from not being in the Chondro community to becoming a part of the Chondro community, the way they represent themselves is, you know, is spot on. So,
yeah.
Okay, so with the crossing comes Dave's favorite word, dum-da-da-dum, the sibs, so to speak. I'm just, you know, to me, you know, there is a lot of selective breeding potential in these type of animals. If you thinking about your projects and you're thinking about selective breeding and you're working with stuff that's crosses already or making different morphs and combos and et cetera, I think that a lot of stock could be put into really selectively picking out some of these crosses that people often pass off as unwanted afterthoughts of morph combos or morph breeding. So with that being said, there's two trains of thought. There's some people that say, I would call off the babies so that they don't go into the market and they don't get passed off as pure. Or there's the people that are, you know, you shouldn't do that. You're evil and you should die. So we have that approach, and then there's the other approach of whether or not you should wholesale. Some people say that that's a horrible thing to do, and others say that that's a great thing to do. Go ahead, Owen.
Well, I would put all mine in a burlap bag with a tank of gasoline and get rid of them. I'm just kidding. I would. there's a lot that you can do with a sibling. I mean, like I'm very good at selling the lower end guys as pets. I mean, everybody here can think of their first carpet python. Was it a $400 Jaguar? If it was, you've done it wrong. I mean, my first carpet python was an $80 Coastal. I mean, and that's just was what I could afford, and I wanted to get into it, and I didn't have the money to spend to get a giant-ass morph. So I got that $80 Coastal, and that thing was spoiled rotten and held every day, and I freaking loved that thing. And that's what opened the floodgates to where I'm at now.
Hold on, let me just clarify something. I'm not talking
yeah.
about if you're breeding a Jag to a Caramel
uh-huh.
or a Coastal. I'm talking
uh-huh.
about if I'm breeding a Zebra Jag to a diamond Caramel.
I know.
And then I get... Go ahead.
I know. I know that's what you're getting at. But what I'm saying is that even a mutt sib that you can write down the percentages, like I wouldn't even try to tell you that it is a Jag sib. I would just be like 50... Like its little label would be 75% Coastal, 25% Jungle. And I've sold those babies before. I had a bunch of them once. Because I just bred a... I bred a 50-50 to one of my lesser tiger males. It was my first clutch of carpet pythons. So it's one of those things that they're very good at, as part of the hobby. They look great, and you can sell them as such as long as you represent them correctly. It's not, it's the same thing. It's as long as I'm doing my part to represent my animals correctly, then it's okay. But you're right. It is going to go out there, and someone is going to pick up a jungle and think it's pure and find out it's a jungle coastal or a jungle diamond. It's unfortunately, we all need to be a little bit smarter about what we're doing. You can't assume what you grab at a table or what you find at a Craigslist ad is pure. So you got to ask questions. You got to talk. You got to chase down leads. You got to check with some people. And you got to not be surprised if it turns out that this thing is a mutt. And if your breeding pure is so important to you, what the hell are you doing buying from a table with a dealer anyway? You should be going to the breeders that you know have the pure stock. So it's an issue that we entirely make ourselves. Because somebody picks up an animal that they think is just too good to be true. This is a funky-looking coastal, and I'm going to breed it. It's going to be more if I'm going to make tons of money. Oh, it's a jungle coastal diamond IJ Darwin inland rough scale python bred lie. Damn. So you just got to know or assume
okay.
that nothing is pure.
Okay. All right. Zach, go ahead.
Colleen, huh? Hey, man, again, I guess it comes back to if you feel like you need to cull in order for your hobby to, in order for you to be, accept your hobby for what it is, hey, man, if that's what you want to do, go ahead. You know what I mean? That's cool. I'm not going to judge you for doing that. What I have a problem with is people telling other people that they should do that.
Damn right.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because frankly, you telling me what I should do with my animal pisses me the off. You know what I mean? Like that. Because you're not cleaning it's crap. You know what I mean? I'm cleaning it's crap. I have the rodent bill. I have the electrical bill. Not you. So what I want to do with my animal is what I want to do with them. So it comes back to the same point. You have to take responsibility for what you're doing. If you feel like that's what you need to do in order to represent them correctly, if you don't feel like representing them correctly and you just want to get rid of them that way, fine. Do it. If you want to put the time in and try to sell them as what they are and you know, hopefully there's enough people out there to buy them and you can do that, then cool. If you need to wholesale them out, I mean, I understand the problem there because we're kind of perpetuating the whole problem, right? We're saying that you shouldn't buy from a dealer, but then when you wholesale, you're pretty much giving your carpets
to them.
Right. You're supplying a dealer with carpets for them to hoax other, you know, new guys, and you know what I mean, which is perpetuating the cycle. So is that really a better thing to do? Man, I don't know. I guess it's a hard thing. Like, let's say I had IJs, right, that I couldn't move my IJs. I had pure IJs. Couldn't move them, nothing at all. And I was like, you know what? I gotta get rid of these, you know. Mind you, I probably wouldn't, but let's say. And I wholesale them. Me personally, knowing that they're pure, I don't think I'd almost second guess it because, you know what, I'm putting something out there that it's not going to be misrepresented. Now, for somebody who's doing coffee, I can see how that can be a problem. Because you're literally putting something out there, you know it's going to be misrepresented. The 8%, whatever, 12%, whatever, 25%, whatever, you know, that's not going to carry. It's not going to carry three deals down. It's not going to happen. If you can live with that, then do you, man. You can't live with that, I don't know. Don't do the breeding, or hey man, black hair food, whatever. I mean, we're talking about culling for, right? I mean, culling in general, if it's a weak baby, I'm believe me, I had actually do that today, believe it or not. My blue tongue skink had a nice meal. So, look, man, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think we're more or less talking about the fact of culling a normal looking
healthy baby
that would
right
make its way out into the world and be misrepresented in some form or another. So
you're talking about Gennaro carpet. Gotcha. Hey man, maybe that'll be a thing.
Yeah.
Maybe there's going to be a point where these things are going to be so mixed up, which I mean, it's looking that way. that a lot of these animals are just going to be labeled as carpet.
And you'd be surprised.
If you want a jungle carpet, you're going to have to go to a guy that's selling specifically jungle carpet. But there's going to be so much mixing that I think you're just going to find carpet. Carpet python. What is it? Carpet python. What's in it?
Right.
I don't know. Whatever, you know? So, hey, there may be a great market out there for that. I don't know.
Right. Hmm. How about you, Dave?
Yeah, culling really pisses me off because it really doesn't accomplish anything. If, for example, you make 88% Irianjaya jaguars and you have 6 Irianjaya jaguars and 6 Irianjaya coastals and you call those normal babies because you see no market value in them or I don't know, whatever's going through your head, you've still got 6 jaguars that you're probably going to sell. What do you think is going to happen to those? I mean, I guess we might need to go back to the old days when jaguars were expensive for those to be relevant or, you know, substitute that with another morph. But still, the point is you're putting a high-dollar cross morph out there, but you're killing the normals, and it's supposed to solve the problem. I mean, the cycle's still going. You're still putting cross animals out there. The only thing you've done is made it easier for yourself because you've removed part of your animals. So I'm just kind of at a loss when people say, oh, yeah, let's breed the morphs. Oh, but I don't want to deal with that other part, so I'm going to kill it off, and I don't have to deal with it. But I can breed my morphs and feel great about themselves. And I don't get that mentality at all. Because if I'm really feeling guilty about putting out crosses, I shouldn't be doing that pairing in the first place. If I have to feel like I have to kill some of my animals, I shouldn't be doing that pairing in the first place.
I think that the you know if now I lost my train of thought there. You were saying that the more if you put the IJ Jag out there that you more or less. Let me ask you this question: would you guys be able to have 4 Jags in front of you? Jungle Jag, Coastal Jag, IJ Jag, Darwin Jag, and be able to tell the difference between the 4?
Yeah.
You would, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For the most part.
If I took any of those SIBs, right? If I took any of those SIBs, would you be able to tell them apart from a pure?
Type, man. Type or lineage charts. But that's my opinion.
I'm just saying that just kind of I'm just playing devil's advocate for a minute with you, Dave, to kind of like get you into the mindset of what I'm thinking, because I know you're saying
here's another question that I'm going to throw back at you.
Okay.
Which one's more likely to breed? The $100 Irianjaya Coastal, or I don't know, pretend Jags, or $2,000 again, or the $2,000 Irianjaya Jaguar?
Well, I think if you're a breeder, I think that if you're somebody that's breeding, you're going to go and spend $2,000 and you're going to want a return on that investment. However, if you're a brand new person and you really don't know much about carpet pythons, I think that it's more likely that you're going to breed that SIB and misrepresent it.
Mm-hmm. I think you'll buy
that's more likely.
Pure,
yeah, because I'm
be
going to
first
say
breeding project when you get big or when you want to try it. Like, I've had this coastal for the longest time and I'm going to get a mate for it and I'm going to get a coastal jag. You find out that your coastal is not your coastal. And now you've just thrown out coastal jags that aren't pure. That is where the problem comes. So,
yeah.
And that's where I go back to the point where if you have that guilty feeling in you, you shouldn't do the pairing.
Exactly.
Here's the thing.
You're not going to.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Eric.
No. Go ahead.
I'm just saying the thing is that, you know, if you were, like Eric said, if you're about to sit down SIBs in front of me that are coastal, IJ jungle, Darwin, whatever, blood, I think I know enough about each individual species that I can try to pick out some kind of marker to tell the difference, but I'm still not going to be 100%. But that's fine. I know where my boundaries are. Somebody new is not going to know the boundaries. So it again falls back on the breeder and the person behind the table to be responsible. And unfortunately, I cannot vouch for anybody else except for myself. So this is where the problem comes in. And here's the thing. A lot of times in others, and this is not just a problem that affects our species. There is something, and I just learned about this weekend. If you look at tegu lizards, there's black, gold, red, and blue. And I found out there's actually called an American, a red, white, and blue, because some guy took a hybridized white and blue, a white and black one and a blue one, and bred it to a red one, and it got this funky colored tegu that if you're not looking at it right, really close, it looks like a normal black and white tegu, but it's got flecks of red and blue on it places. So that's an issue, because this thing can now breed with all the other ones, and it's all mixed up to hell, because this guy just kept cranking them out and selling them. So it is an issue unless you are knowledgeable enough to know what you're looking for. So, again, if you want stuff in your collection, it is your responsibility to take that extra step to ensure that your stuff is what you want to be representing and is what you want to be putting out on the market. And do your best to represent your animals and protect your customers. If some guy wants to go out there and he wants to breed carpet pythons and he wants to breed a IJ to whatever the hell, that's on him. But you need to represent it. As far as culling goes, I can never bring myself to cull a healthy animal that is eating, breathing, and doing its own thing. I have culled a few babies that just were not, they weren't going to make it, and that's as far as I go.
Well,
and I will gladly give an animal away to someone who has no desire of breeding and just wants it as a pet. But I just make sure they know what the hell it is before it goes. And it's just
well, what happens
the way it
when
goes.
They,
if I produce it, it's
what
my
happens when they sell that? What happens when they sell that?
That's
or they give it away. I know,
that's
but you put it out there.
I can't vouch for them.
Here's my problem with the whole culling debate, real quick. Right. I'm going to put it in a nutshell. At the beginning of, I think Zach said, I think all three of you guys said this. You basically said that, you know, we've hit on this a number of times. What you do in your snake room is your business. You know, and I think it was you, Zach, that said that, you know, I'm not going to tell you, I don't want somebody telling me that I have to cull this animal because it's a sib and it's a mix, right? But here's my problem. Why are you guys telling me that I'm evil if I do it?
No, I don't care.
You guys are
no,
throwing
no,
it back.
No,
no,
no. I didn't say that. I didn't
no,
say
no, no,
that.
No.
I said,
that?
Do you.
No.
I didn't say
no, no,
what
no.
you're doing is wrong.
No, hold on. When, Dave, when you said that you think that I shouldn't be doing a pairing because I am calling off the... And I'm not saying that I do this or don't do this. I'm just playing devil's advocate again.
I hate you when you do this.
But you're telling me that I shouldn't tell you that you should call off your offspring. You're doing diamond jungle crosses. And I say, and I'm a diamond breeder, and I come along and say, you know what? You're really effing up the market. What the hell's wrong with you? That shit should be culled, you know? And you're like, nah, man, that shouldn't be culled. But... At the same time, you're telling me that I shouldn't call it because I somehow put more value on a morph. I get what you're saying, and I get where you're coming from. But at the same time, I think my approach is that ultimately I'm trying to protect the guys that are doing the pure, quote-unquote, pairings. And I'll tell you where I have this struggle all the time. IJs, okay? I love IJs. I do. There's just something about a normal IJ that I really dig. I really love them.
Yeah.
Here's my problem. I really love granite jags as well. I want to make a super zebra granite. Okay, so obviously I'm going to have some stuff. I'm kind of have to be at a contradiction. I don't want somebody telling me that I can't feed off my offspring to a snake that eat snakes in the wild that I keep in breeding. And I don't think that that's anybody's business, and I don't think I should be labeled somebody that's evil or bad or tell me that I shouldn't do this pairing basically because I'm culling off the offspring. But if I culled off the offspring because they weren't healthy or they weren't eating or anything
right,
like that, somehow
right.
that would somehow make that okay. What I don't understand the debate when it comes in like that because – at the beginning of the debate, it always starts as, you shouldn't tell me what I should do in my snake room, but I should tell you what you should do in your snake room. You see what I mean?
I think my words got a little mixed up here. I was not singling you out. It was a broad general term of...
Yeah, Dave,
if
I know.
Weighing on your,
I'm just saying, if it's weighing on your shoulders, consider it. If you can go ahead with it, whatever. But consider the option. That's what I'm trying to get at. I don't want to come across like I'm saying, don't do it. Just consider.
Right. I'm not saying that you're throwing that.
You're responsible for your babies that you hatched. If you want to cull them, cull them. If you want to sell them, sell them. You just need to make sure you do both properly. Don't just, you know, stick it in a freezer. If you got a blackhead, feed it to it. If you got monitors, feed it to it. Who cares? But as long as you are responsible for your babies. If you hatched it, you took on the responsibility of having to do with it. Don't make somebody else do your culling for you. Don't let them go out there in a lot as just carpet python. Take the goddamn responsibility that you took on as a breeder to hatch whatever it is you hatch downstairs.
Right. No, Dave, I know you're not saying me, but I'm just trying to...
Might be. How do you know?
No. But let's be honest. I kind of fall into both categories of this type of thing. And when you're riding the fence, you know, you kind of have to look at it as ultimately, you know, what's best for the long term of this hobby. Now,
right.
To me, I'm just saying that, you know, if I go in a wholesale off a group of these quote unquote sibs, I think Zach's right. You don't think that a chopper is going to sit there and say, you know what?
No.
These are IJ diamond crosses of some sort. No, because that's not going to sell. But what's going to sell is the fact that they're IJ.
Tell by the eye stripe, yeah.
Yeah, and somebody's going to come along and say, man, that's a really cool IJ. I really dig it. And they're going to come into the forum and they're going to post it up and then they're going to say, that's not an IJ. That's not some kind of new morph or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, and that's how it's going to come across. Ah, this is some special new IJ of some. Hold on one second. My dog feels my passion. It's barking at me.
Hey, they're tiny things. Get out of here. The fashion, you said it once, everyone drinks. I'm sorry, what?
Anyway, I just think it's that, to me, that's kind of a topic that, you know, it hits home a little bit because I kind of go back and forth inside of myself and whether or not that this pairing is should I do this or should I not do this. But I think of at the beginning, we're talking about carpet python morphs and the whole morph mentality. In order to get carpet pythons out there and get people to see how cool they are, you kind of have that morph thing that has to happen as well. So do you just let carpet pythons stay where they are, or do you try to promote them and make these new combos that's going to put them out there that may get somebody into just the normal coastal? You know, I think it kind of starts where you get excited about the morph, and then it seems like most carpet people kind of get in that way, and then they sort of change. And then they sort of say, hey, you know what? Whether it's a jungle, coastal, IJ, diamond, brittle, whatever it is, there's a flavor there of a pure one, and they kind of seek it out. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it kind of works the opposite, where you're like, oh, man, this jag is badass. You know, I get into it, and then you're like, you find a subspecies that you like, and then you kind of latch onto it and kind of want to – you're all about it, you know? So
right.
Right.
I don't know.
My thing is, if you're going to mix, you got to own it. You know what I mean? There can't be no hesitation or guilt there. You got to own that shit. You know what I mean? If you're going to do it, you got to say, you know what, this is what I'm doing for this reason. And you know what, whoever has a problem with that could go somewhere. I don't care. This is what I'm doing. Because you have to own it. If you're going to do those things and you're coming at it and like, four different, you're like, oh, I don't know if I should do it. I was just gonna set you up, man. I'm telling you, I think that's the wrong way to. You gotta own that shit. You gotta own your decision. If you're saying you want to do this to better the hobby in this sort of way, because you want to get more people into it by pushing the morph game more, then dude, own that shit. You know what I mean? And I understand, because at the same time, you like IJ, so it's like, you know, I don't want to mention what they're doing, but man, you know, at the end of the day, not everybody's gonna be happy.
I have to make myself happy, but that's why I would feed them off blackhead food. You see what
right.
I'm saying?
There you go.
That's what I'm owning.
Exactly.
What I'm owning is the fact that I'm going to call off those SIBs. Unless
there you go.
I'm selling them to somebody that is going to use it as a mixed morph project. And that's why
right.
I've strategically done a lot of my projects so that they're going to be het something. And then being het something, those SIBs, now changes it a little bit. No longer are they just normal. No longer are they just normal. They have some added value in the market. Not to me, because to me, I find some of the crosses just as cool as just the normal. But you've now sort of protected that to a certain extent, if that makes sense. Because it's
right,
now
it
adds
does.
Value to the quote-unquote unwanted normal. Or unquote mutt, whatever you want to say.
And it'll be represented properly because that's where all the value of the animal comes from, is that it is het for something.
Correct.
So by making it het for something, now you understand what it is. This
sure.
is a IJ Jag het something, or it's this. It's a, it's a zebra het, granite. Oh, now I know what's in that. So it helps.
Yes. Otherwise,
yeah.
it's going to go to it just depends. It depends on whether the fact of if it's going to if I know I'm selling to somebody that's going to breed it in a mixed project, or ultimately that the end game is going to be something that I could sell it into a pair where somebody could benefit from it, then I would sell it. If I knew that
right.
that's what's going to happen. At that point, I guess even at that point, it's really up to whether or not you're going to do it. For instance, I saw you have a jag head granite from me, Owen. I'm assuming
yes,
you're going to make granite jags from that, right? So
I don't know, maybe.
What you do at this point is really just up to you. I can't be responsible anymore for
right.
what you're doing. But you're not going to sell it off as a – if I sold you one of the IJ crosses that I have that's het granite, is not necessarily
yeah.
as valuable as a normal het granite.
No.
That's just the pure IJ. However, if you're trying to make granite jags, that may be a way that you may be able to get into that project.
Right, right, right. Point. And my thing is, like, my other mutt, Luna, my ivory diamond jungle jag, yeah, her. I have no other plans for her except to get an ivory jungle male, and that will be my pair. She'll never breed with anything else just because I don't want to have to try to keep track of what's going on there or anything else. Like, I'm not going to get a diamond and breed it to her. I'm not going to grab her one season and throw her with my tiger or my coastals. Her job is to get big and breed with an ivory jungle male that I'm going to get, and then just to try to continue the project to get towards white jaguars. And I mean, along the way, if I have anything, it's going to be there'll be ivory jag sibs,
right?
Because now I can tell you it's an ivory jag sib. There's coastal blood in there, and there's ivory jungles and there's diamond blood. Damn it. All right, I need a blackhead. Shit. Oh well, that ended that.
What bothers me about mixers, right? Is that they're so damn apologetic. You know what I'm saying? It's like, forgive me for mixing this together. Please don't chastise me for doing such a thing. But if you're gonna own it and do it, and don't worry about what everybody else says, and do your own thing because that's what you like. And it's just the apology, being apologizing. And everybody chastises you. It's annoying, man, because, who knows?
I think you're right, Zach, but I think the problem is that a lot of people, I'll speak for myself.
Go on.
I think that the morphs and carpet pythons are cool. I also think that the normals and carpet pythons are cool. So what you're doing is it's not necessarily trying to make anybody else happy. I'm just trying to make me happy because I know what's going to happen when I put this together. Because I know ultimately if I do anything along these steps wrong, somehow, somewhere, this could just screw the whole carpet python gene pool up. And that's what I'm going back and forth in myself with. I can do the lineage. I can represent my animals as what they are. People can know that that's one of the reasons why there's certain projects that I will never cross. You'll never see me cross these things because ultimately maybe they're going to make nice animals, but I'm not going to cross them into something because I want to make sure that people know that my stock is my stock. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like this,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about this for a second. If nobody knew me and my reputation is not there, that I'm nobody knows what I am, and I have albino crosses is what I got first, and now I have albino pure Darwins, are you going to think without knowing and looking at what I have if this is pure or not pure without looking at the parents?
Yeah,
you
I was pretty sure you were a drug dealer when you showed up on the scene for the first time buying all that crap you bought. I'm like, this guy is clearly doing something illegal. So I didn't trust the shit out of you.
This guy's not legit, no.
No.
I'm
not,
just
that he's lying.
If you're walking up, you don't know me from nobody. And I have albino crosses and I have albino pure. And are you going to think in the back of your mind that, you know, this? That's why there's certain projects that will never, ever see my cross projects. And that's why
right.
I have strategically made my collection the way it is, you know, for those reasons. There's things I will not cross, you know. And that's all I – because that's –
No, and it makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense.
Okay. Now that we're past that one, is everybody feeling –
There
feeling
we find
okay?
Who's bleeding? Who's bleeding?
Yeah.
If you need a Band-Aid, a break, a cookie, a hug – we can take a break. Everybody all right?
Eric.
All right, we're good. Okay.
But the reason
I think,
that...
I think Eric stabbed Dave. I think Dave's dead. Dave, are you alive?
You're doing good, man.
Dave posted
you're alive?
Up
you're alive?
All the wild... Dave posted up all the wild-type jungles on the radio Facebook page, and I keep getting blown away by those things because I would own all of them, but it's... The only one that even looks remotely like our shit here is top left. I can't even read
Mission
the pictures.
Beach.
So
right.
It's just like, yeah, it's gold queens, I guess. But, yeah, so it's just that's just cool. Oh, shit, bottom left looks like my icons. All right, we need to move on quickly before I keep looking
at
these.
I hope that people I think that one of the things, and again, I know that we differ on different topics, and you know, but at the end of the day, the whole idea is that you can hear other people's approach to what they do, and you know, and you can make up your own mind. If you think that I'm a jerk because I would even think of culling an animal, then so be it. I'm not going to apologize for it because that's what. You know what I mean? That's just what it's about.
You monster.
That, if you disagree with that, then so be it. You know, I don't know what to tell you. But I'm just trying to be responsible. And I think that doesn't make what Dave's saying wrong. It doesn't make what Zach's saying wrong. And it doesn't make what Owen's saying wrong. You know, this is just...
Sweet, I got that in writing.
You have to approach it and make your own decision. That's kind of my whole point, so...
Variety and competition are the spices of life. To have this many people passionate about this way or this thing about this species is what makes this whole community special to me. We could all be sitting and go, yes, 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 you breed the animals at 80. And everybody goes, okay, next question. And then what the hell? You don't ever get a step forward. Because we have the variety, because we have the different types of ways, different spices, different things, it makes carpet python that intriguing to me. Moving, breathing, conflict amongst friends. It's great. I love it. Let's continue.
Right.
We're
going
kind
to...
We all disagreed, right?
Yeah, I know, right? That's what makes our magic, Owen. Me and you.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I said it to you once. You're like, don't worry, I'm not going to replace you on the show with Zach. I'm like, you can't. You guys agree all the time. You're like, I just are off. Yes. Those days are cool.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Now what?
I mean,
yeah, exactly. I can't be replaced. Come on now. Continue.
So So basically at this point, here we are, guys. We're coming to the end of being on air. So if anybody's listened to us on air, you can continue listen to the podcast. You can download it on iTunes. But my thoughts are this, is we hit on a couple more questions, and then we probably – I don't know if you guys are having a good time or if you're enjoying the conversation. We can always have another one, you know, because I want to keep these going because I think it's good. You know,
yeah. I mean, my tigers are hatching. Yeah, but look at those.
Oh my goodness!
So.
I haven't been able to beat up Owen about incubation yet. What is this?
Oh yeah. No! Oh.
Yeah, that was gonna be awesome.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's a shame.
So, don't worry. We'll get Josh on here too to beat you up about that as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Good name.
<Anyway. laughs> I kind of like this question. And this came in from and this kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier, so this is why I'm picking this one, and then we can pick up with other ones later on. But
cool.
This came from Damien Hyde from Reptile Connections down in Australia.
Yeah.
And his question was, what are the key drivers and the methodology used when choosing your pairings come mating season? This has a lot to do with what you said, Dave, about how – you know, if you're not going to own the results of the project, then maybe you shouldn't be doing the project, so to speak. But
yeah.
is the main driver for you money? Is it the industry buzz, what people are saying is cool? Is it genetic diversity? And are you doing your methodology? Are you like picking your projects way in advance? Is it a hit and a hope, like, or is it just you know that these are previously proven pairs? So go ahead, Owen.
The first part I would take into account probably all of them. You know, you always want to produce at least one clutch of something that you know is higher dollar or something that's going to sell, because you know you do need to make some money off these guys if you are a breeder or a seller. Yes, you do. Shut up. How else are you going to pay for rats and all that other stuff? I don't make a million, apparently, Zach makes. I have a job. It sucks. Shut up. It is my turn to talk. Quiet. God damn it. Anyway, the other thing is I definitely take genetic diversity into account. I don't like crossing brothers and sisters and mothers and sons and fathers and daughters. I will avoid that as much as possible. As well as my proven breeders, I like to mix it up every once in a while. I mean, just because a pair is proven and it's proven multiple times, like past 2 years I've bred my Jag Talon to my Lesser Tiger Trinity, and they've always produced, and it's like clockwork. And I mixed it up. Talon went with Sophie, and Trinity went with that tiger from Balin. One was successful, the other one slugged out. But it's cool to try. You always got the projects, and I like to look at each individual female and try to figure out what the best mate would be for her, given her colors and genetics and things like that. That's what I like about it.
Okay. How about you, Zach?
My number one drive for breeding is selective breeding. That's it. I don't look at the market. I don't look at price of things. I don't care. So, for instance, I have my male coastal and my male and my female coastal here that I think will make a great pairing and produce some really nice coastals. I have a Tiger Jags in here that'll be ready to go next. I mean, that is ready to go next year. But guess what? He's not going to be breeding next year. Because I don't care. I don't need to make Jags, or I don't need to sell the animals. That's not what I'm in this for. So, I mean, I guess it comes back to that point that I kind of touched on earlier. But, you know, be real about your intentions. I think, I you know, a lot of times I feel like, you know, a lot of people try to, if your intention with this quote-unquote hobby or this industry is to make money, then again, own that, you know, and tell people, yeah, I'm doing this because guess what, man, I want to make money off of this. You know what, I don't, if that's your shtick, if that's what you want to do or whatever, that's cool, man. Do you. That's, that, it's, if the buck coming in is gonna make you happy, I mean, I can't tell you any different. But what I'm saying is that a lot of people say, oh, I'm just pairing because, you know, Jag. Come on, man. Be honest about what you're doing. You know, I'm doing this pairing because I want to see really cool coastals. I could be, you know, damned if there's a Jag in there or whatever. Because that's just what I want to do. But I don't see this as a money-making venture. So I guess that, I don't know. Would I like it to pay for my reps and everything else? Yeah, that'd be nice. But I also believe that you're gonna make that initial investment back. No, really, no matter what you really breed, to be honest. So, you know, that's my whole thing. So yeah, when it comes to genetic diversity, yeah, I try to have as much genetic diversity as possible. I'm not gonna breed exposed species if I can get away with it. So, but then again, in line breeding, there's gonna be a little bit of that. So for me, it's selective breeding is the number one reason why I breed what I breed.
Okay. How about you, Dave?
I'm a Zach, actually, 100% selective breeding. When I'm pairing animals together, it's for a purpose. I have an idea of what I want that product to produce. So mm-hmm. I tried at one point to map out, like you did, Eric, for like years of like breeding different pairings I wanted to do and figure out where I wanted to go with it. It's kind of hard to do that with selective breeding, really, because you never
yep.
know how that pairing is going to turn out. Like, I want to,
mm-hmm.
with my coastals, I want to make hyper-banded coastals, and I want to make the most completely striped tigers or striped coastals, whatever you want to call them, out there, two different ends. But I can't sit down and say, oh, yeah, by, you know, 2014, I'm going to have the most banded coastal ever, and then I'm going to breed it to that one, and you know, I don't know. So my methodology is kind of at the start of the season, I look at who I want to pair them together, and then look at the offspring. Look at who's going to further the project. Look at what I think is what I'm looking for. As far as genetic diversity, yeah, I'll cross brothers and sisters and mother and father and cousins, whatever. They're snakes. I think they seem to have a little bit better tolerance for it. I mean, look at some of the lineage charts that, you know, the three of us have created. You know, you, Zach,
mm-hmm.
And Eric. There's a lot of line breeding, a good amount of inbreeding in there. Now, some animals have suffered from it, Granadieria and Chayas being one of them. But I don't see a whole lot of animals suffering from it. I think so long as you manage it correctly and know when to outcross, I don't think it's a problem. So, in general, just look at your project, figure out where you want to go with it, and work it. Work it responsibly.
Right. Let's see. As far as you have a point that I kind of for certain projects like selective breeding, I take red coastals, for example.
Yeah.
I always wanted to work with red coastals. The Jags, and I thought it would be really, really nice to have that in a tiger. Luckily, I was able to secure the Molly Ringwald, and she fits perfectly with my Red Jag V. To me, that's a match made in heaven. And when I kind of look at that, what's going to happen after that fact, I don't know. I'll give you an example of... you know, as far as, like, with me, with mapping stuff out, I think that my approach has been, when I decided that I wanted to get involved in some of the higher-end morphs, I thought it was very important that I thought about what would give me the most bang for my buck, so to speak, and how I would be able to be involved in multiple projects. I think that's where planning stuff out comes into play. One of the things that I've actually learned from the that I didn't do right away was the fact that have a visual male. That's
mm-hmm.
one of the things that I got a lot of hets. Those hets are now, I don't want to say worthless in my collection, but I have visuals because
they're redundant.
One of the main reasons why I want a visual is because it's a lot easier to sell a snake like I said earlier with the whole cross thing, if I have a zebra that's head albino, it's a lot easier to sell that albino that zebra when they know that it's 100% het as opposed to a 50% het or 66 posset or whatever. So that's kind of one of the things that I changed up as far as that goes. I think that as far as the driver of what I'm trying to do, I'm just trying to make really cool carpet pythons. There's a lot of things that I see people do that I want to try to, you know, take it to the next level. The Citrus Tiger project, I want to make an orange and black tiger. That's what I want to do. I mean, I think that ultimately that's where I would like to take that project. Is it ever going to be an orange like a ring python? I don't think so. But that's, you know, ultimately that's where I would want to take that project. How that's going to work out, I have no idea. You know, hopefully I'll be able to selectively breed animals to get closer to that color. What else? I don't know. I mean, genetic diversity is kind of important to me. Citrus tiger is another one. I kind of bought certain tigers and certain coastals specifically to outcross that project to get some genetic diversity into it. One of the things that never, and I guess this might be surprising, one of the things that never really drives me on my parents is money. Because honestly, I would probably have a harder time selling animals than, say, Owen is going to have selling animals. And I don't mean that in a bad way. What I mean by that, Owen, is you know, if we both go to a show and I have albinos, granite jags, zebra jags, they're not going to move as fast as you're going to be able to sell a caramel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true.
Or a normal coastal. Somebody at a show is not walking around with $2,000, whereas opposed to they might have 70 bucks.
Right, you got to know what to bring to a show and where to expect to sell. And, you know, it's important that, at least in my thing, some clutches help fund other things. You know, we now have a giant collection of white lip, all based on the back of us selling jag clutches. So,
right. I mean, it is. I'll take albino zebra, for example. My end game with that project is to make a super zebra, an albino super zebra. That's my end game with that project, which is probably the end game for most people with that project, I would guess. But, you know, I have the zebra head albino female, and I bought the albino male. The idea is that I'll be able to breed those. Hopefully, I would be able to make an albino zebra that's a male, and then go and turn and breed that back to the female that's the zebra head albino. And then hopefully hit on a super zebra albino. And that's why I think that you have to think about, especially when you're working with morphs, some of the, you know, map it out X years in advance, so to speak. If that makes sense. So I would never – one of the things that I wanted to touch on is that I think it's kind of cool if you do a pairing and then don't do that pairing again. And I know that's going to sound kind of crazy, like maybe do it once or twice and then don't really do that pairing again, because I think it puts some extra value on the offspring from that clutch. So I'll give you another example. GQ and M-Pen. I will probably never, ever cross, make that pairing ever again, because it's been done twice.
Right.
And man, that thing is beeping like crazy.
Zach's having a deep conversation. Continue.
Yeah, I think that it puts more value on the animals from that clutch. And I think about some of the pairings that I saw some people do that I should have picked up animals from, and I didn't, and I regret it. because now they're not doing that pairing again. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Right.
That's my thought on doing the pairing again. I'm not saying it's a bad thing if you do it, but I think to keep just pushing out animals from the same pairing over and over and over and over again kind of makes...
Kills it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't put any value on the animal.
Yeah. And you know what? If it was a good clutch, you're going to get enough people to be like, please God, breed it again. And, you know, you will. So, and then all those babies will go.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything else that you guys want to get on with that?
You nailed it on the head, man.
Okay. I guess the last one that I'm going to, that we'll hit on for the night, is let's talk about the carpet python market. Where do you see the, this again was from Damien. So that's why I'm going to hit
Damien,
on this question.
Freaking hard questions.
Yeah. Where do you see the carpet python scene heading? Will it ever compete with the ball pythons? And here's an interesting one. Will scrubs and olives become the new large python to have in the U.S.? Since, you know, they're putting the restrictions on all the berms and, you know, that type of African rocks, retics. Well, not on retics, but they want to try. So do you think that those animals will take place of the larger type of animals? Go ahead, Owen.
The way I see the carpet python market going is up completely. We're on the rise when it comes to the new morphs hitting the market, when it comes to the new interest that people are having in such an animal, when it comes to, in the past couple of years, we've had a major book written. The rise and fall of a whole species can be gauged on, like, if albino shows up. Once an albino shows up and the new morphs come, people start paying attention to it. And all these new morphs that we all know about are going to start becoming lower in price and be seen in the public eye. So we're right outside a very big bubble that is going to be the carpet market. As opposed to whether we're ever going to compete with ball python, I don't think so. And I'll tell everybody that the market I think that I can relate the carpet python market to most of the time is the reticulated python and boa market. Our morphs act a lot like reticulated python, and it seems to be a specialized market in that sense. People are willing to take the risk with the retics. People are willing to get carpet pythons. It's just the way it is. I think we're just a little bit more popular than retics are going to be because of the size and general attitude of the carpet python. But I don't think we're going to take the ball python. What I think is going to be ball python market is when all the Antaresia get over here. If you were to bring all the Antaresia morphs that are over in Australia here, you'd have a serious contender for the ball python market. So that's what I think. As opposed to the scrubs and the olives becoming the new top-tier animals, I don't think so. And the only unfortunate part is that scrubs hold the stigma of being like a chondro on steroids. Hard to keep, but a battle axe. So nobody wants to really give them any chance. And I think a lot of people don't find the olives interesting just because they're one solid color. And the only morph they have is albino that makes them all white, and they're still expensive. I think when albino olives drop down in price, they'll become popular. But the normal olive, no, I don't think they're going to replace retic or Burmese.
Okay. How about you, Zach?
The carpet market, huh? What do I think? It's on the rise, and it's going to continue to grow more and more, I think. What direction it's going to grow is kind of clear at this point, as in the morph game, it is what it is. Whether you want it to be or not, you know, I've come to just accept it as, you know, because I'm more of a species guy, so... To me, unique species and such like, you know, things like that are way cooler than any morph. But, okay, that's, you know, this is the hobby we're in, so I kind of have to accept that that's what other people like. So, so is that going to be a good thing? Is that going to be a bad thing? Man, I don't know. Are we going to lose a subspecies because of the morph market? Potentially. Can we lose genetic diversity because of the morph market? Potentially. Will we ever catch up to the ball pythons? No. I don't think we ever will. Do I want to? No, definitely not. I don't think so, man. I think a lot of that drawback that we associate with the ball python market is because it's so popular. Because you start talking about big money for animals like that, you know, with money there's problems, right? So that's, you know, I think you have to kind of take that with a market like that. But so I think that the olive pythons and scrub pythons will ever be as popular as, say, the retics are and such? No, not at all. And I think the reason why retics are skyrocketing, I don't know if anybody else has noticed, but my goodness, people are jumping on their retic bandwagon and just running with it. And mainly because of all the morphs that honestly have come out. You got the pies, you got everything. I mean, it's flying. So, actually, it's kind of a shame because I think that's kind of stealing some of my thunder, believe it or not. Because a lot of people who are trying to diversify a little bit with, you know, out of ball pythons, they're looking at retics like, wow, man, they're commanding a lot of money. They're, you know, a bigger snake and, you know, they have a coolness factor and kind of, you know, so I think a lot of people are maybe gravitating towards that. I think a lot of people are going to be mistaken when they find 20-foot animals in their house. But, hey, I mean, a lot of people are getting into it. A lot of people don't realize what they're getting into. So, I mean, that's a whole other thing. I think we'll find out real soon when that kind of all happens. And I think it's a shame because I think that olives are awesome and big. But they don't have the pattern. Everybody loves pattern. Everybody loves lots of color. The olive pythons are, well, olives. I mean, I think they're cool, but, you know. Scrubs, honestly, man, I would love for scrubs to be more popular, but at the same time, scrubs are scrubs. They are, you know, I know we want to say that they're not everything people say they are, nasty and everything else, but listen, man, you can't... You can't reach to a scrub's cage. You can't reach to a scrub's cage like you can a carpet. You just can't. So we can't expect people. I mean, a lot of what people say about them, I mean, there is some truth to it. So they are a little more finicky about the things and stress easy and things like that. It's just the truth. And, yeah, maybe it's because, well, it's because there are a lot of marwahs and all that. So who knows, man. In 10 years, maybe they will be the new hot thing. But I also feel like, at least when it comes to ball pythons and the whole morph game, I feel like there is a shift where people are realizing, hey, man, there's some other cool species out there. I think, you know, I think we're seeing ball python people diversify. We're seeing colubrid people diversify. Everybody's kind of picking a side project, which is I think is great. I think that's what's gonna happen. And hopefully in the future, it won't be ball python shows, but. Who knows? David.
Hey,
oh, David.
I was waiting for Eric to do his whole David.
Oh,
here.
He's
oh, yeah.
Falling asleep, so I will
no,
take
I'm,
control. David.
I'm sorry,
I
thought my thing was on mute. It wasn't. Go
I
ahead,
bored
Dave.
Him.
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
Oh, well, carpet pythons are definitely getting more popular, but it's kind of for the morphs, it seems like. Carpet pythons are kind of going through growing pains right now, at least from what I've seen, and that people are jumping into them because we now have multiple mutations to play with, and a lot of them are coming down to prices where I guess you could say the high-end hobbyists can afford them. Is that a good thing? I don't know. Could be. I mean, it puts in the spotlight, I guess, but you know, like Zach says, it kind of destroys as much as it gives. It takes away genetic diversity, it takes away kind of our own little niche in the hobby. You know, we go from being in, mm-hmm. in the background where we're just kind of those obscure people that really love carpet pythons, have our own thing going, and now all of a sudden we are out front, everywhere, in the public eye. I don't know if that made sense or not.
Okay.
Will it be like ball pythons? No. We don't have... I think what keeps ball pythons going is a simple fact that they stay in drawers. There's a ton of different mutations, like absurd numbers of mutations. And that kind of new factor just kind of keeps people going and going and going. I think when people kind of realize that the number of new morphs we have in carpet pythons starts to dwindle, popularity is kind of going to decrease a little bit again. Because I guess you could say the uncharted waters are gone. Well, people move on to the new, not new, pardon me, they'll move on to the pure species and subspecies, I don't know. When it comes to olive pythons and scrubs, I'm not thinking scrubs are going to be very popular. I know in Ohio, we actually ended up having them put on a list of regulated snake species, and I swear I've seen scrub pythons on other proposed bills. I think they are in the politicians' eyes when it comes to giant snakes. For olive pythons, I'd really like them to be. They're a really cool snake, but they don't have the pattern, and people just see a drab snake. So I don't know. I really wish they would, though. They seem like a really intelligent, curious species that almost like a smaller retake, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. They're awfully annoying. They always want food. At least mine do.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you should mention that the big snake bans, because David, we actually have a list of states we're not allowed to sell our scrubs into, and Ohio is the top of our list.
Mm-hmm.
And did you guys know that I'm actually not allowed to bring olive pythons into the state of New York?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
They're on a list. It's a weird list.
Yep.
It's like a major. It's the large species of monitors. It's the big snakes like berms, retics, and things like that. And then it's olive python. Nothing else. After, like, it's just olive is just out of there, nowhere. So it's like, oh, other liasses are fine. I can bring the Max and the Savu and other things, just no olive.
Well, it's everything that can reach or get over 10 feet in New York. That's
no.
What it is.
Yeah, but they don't mention specifically by name scrub python. So you can bring baby scrubs to certain shows.
I thought Amethyst is.
Yeah.
So you could bring what, Malukins and stuff.
Yeah,
I bought Malukins at.
Yep.
Well, Malukins are considered different. He's talking about
Mike Bell has 10-foot Malukins. Well, yeah, they don't.
Yeah.
Here's the thing: the people who are making the rules don't know what they're talking about. So they know amethystine gets huge, like through amethystine, but they don't know Malukins can get 10-foot.
But is that the average size? But there's not the exception.
No, that is not the average size. That happens when you feed your animals.
The carpet pythons are 10, 11 foot long. That doesn't mean that I should put them on a bandwidth.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the exceptional specimen.
Here's the problem.
That's how olive ended up on the bandwidth.
You're looking at
that long. Oh, Lord. So
you're looking at when they go and make these rules, and this is just a side note, but they're looking at material that could be dated. I'm sure that if you go back and look at a coastal carpet, I think you're right, Dave. You probably look at old literature. They're probably saying you're looking at 10, 12 feet. And I think that's why a lot of people shied away from coastal carpet pythons and jags, because of the fact that they thought that they got big and they didn't want to deal with it, which kind of confuses me, because those same people that probably shied away from a coastal carpet are the same people that will now go and buy a retic because it's a crazy looking morph, you know?
Yep.
So
yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole different story. My thoughts on the carpet python market and the scene and where it's heading. I think that you guys are right to a certain extent. Unfortunately, in this world that of herpetoculture that we're in today, it's all morph driven. And that's good and that's bad. that's good, because I think that none of us are going to deny that when we see, you know, a super caramel zebra jag, that we don't think that that is a badass looking carpet python. However,
mm-hmm.
You have the good and the bad. I could probably say this better. I relate it to music. I think of Metallica, and I tried to write this down before, but it totally came across bad. Metallica was kind of like, you know, here they are, they're Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning album, and Master of Puppets. And they're kind of this band that have their own little niche, that people really dig them, and they're kind of different than the norm, and they're not what's out there, what most people are listening to. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, while you're in that band, you're trying to get to the level to where you can be super successful. However, when you get to that level and you're out in the spotlight and you're super successful, with that comes certain things that you may not necessarily want, and things that you would it's like selling out, so to speak. And I think that that's probably the problem that may happen if carpets become more and more popular. You get into that, you have a double-edged sword where, you know, the only thing that makes them cool is the morphs. I think one of the things that people overlook, though, and I say this all the time, we've selectively bred jungles, and we've gotten stellar results. To the fact that no matter who you are, I don't care who you are, where you are, you're at a show, and you see, a jungle from across the table or across the show there, you're going to take notice to it, and it's going to turn your head. Coastals, not so much. Nobody's really done it. IJs, not so much. Brettles, same thing. You know, you got all these other different carpets that could be selectively bred, and over the years, hopefully they will, where just the normal will be just as cool as the morph. So hopefully there's people out there, at least this is what I plan to do. I want to make it just as cool to have a normal coastal carpet as it is to have a super caramel zebra jag, because of the selective breeding that's been put into it. I think you're just looking at another color. I mean, if you took my N-Pen coastal that has lavender color and said it was a morph, people would be going crazy about it. But the fact that it's just a coastal, only certain people go crazy about it. And, it's kind of frustrating to a certain extent. I think that they'll never replace the ball python. That's for sure. That'll never happen. Without a doubt, that is what it is, and that'll never get replaced. I think that that's kind of good, because I don't think that we want to be that. I think what you're starting to see, though, with ball pythons is you're starting to see that there's so many genes in an animal that you don't even know what the hell is in it. And I think I heard some radio show, and they were talking about the fact that I think it was Brian Barczyk was talking about the fact that they've had to rethink how they do their pairings, because they're not really adding any value to a 5-gene animal when people are looking for these 2-gene animals, and they can't really get their hands on those type of things anymore, because people are pumping so many genes into this different animal that you don't even know what you got until you would breed it necessarily. So,
right.
You know, and I think with that shift, I think that, go ahead, what? Zach. Zach got muted for a second. He had all this.
No, I'm good. Go.
Me
no,
all
I'm
day.
Good.
No,
I'm
no.
Just saying,
He mutes me all the time. Continue.
Yeah, whenever I hear noise or, like, you're shuffling around in cages and stuff, I just mute it out. But, sorry. Anyway.
I
don't
want to
hear
you
speak.
My new snake.
Okay. Yeah, right. I think that, as far as the whole ball, I think that people are kind of turning around, that they're looking for that other project. And what I've seen is, at least with talking to people and everybody in the hobby and being exposed to different people, that they're kind of looking for something different. And that's cool. I think of some people. holy crap. I'm getting like messages like crazy. Holy shit. Sorry.
Focus and talk.
I can't when I'm getting messages. I got like 14 messages popped up on my Facebook. I got you guys. I got four other people just messaging me. I have to turn it off when I do it. You guys. Look, he's just going to keep writing, ha, 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 ha. Oh, I see what you wrote. I see what you wrote.
No, you didn't. No,
you yeah,
didn't.
Way to go, Owen. Mute. Anyway, I lost my train of thought now. Can we mute Eric? No, you can't mute me.
No,
unless you
no,
have
he has control. No. I have no control, no power.
As far as scrub pythons, I think that the thing with scrub pythons is, yeah, I think they're kind of, they fall under the rules just as well. I think the only one that would be the exception to that would be the tannin bars, and that would be it. As far as people working with them and them being nasty, I think that they are a little bit on the aggressive side, and they can be difficult to work with, but I believe that's because that they're so close to wild-caught animals that... that's why nobody works with them, and then they're not forwarded in the hobby, so to speak. But I think of retics, and I think of how nasty and what a bad reputation they had when they first came in, because when I was younger, my father had one, and it was the spawn of Satan. But now, you know, they're as tame as dogs. So, you know, I mean, it just shows you what some breeding will do, and captive breeding, and what can happen. But, you know, olive pythons, cool snake. But I'm with you guys. I don't see them as being, and it's a shame, because a green Burmese python, basically the same thing. You know, when they came out, they were the, you know, everybody had to have one. Now you got an olive python that kind of follows the same, somewhat of the same, that it's patternless. Nobody cares, so.
Yeah, well, so you and I talked about the, what is it, the granite super zebra looks like a Mac. And nobody wants a Mac. But
yeah.
Granite super zebra, they'll build a road to your door if you got it. So.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah. But, yeah. I think that the I think Facebook has helped carpet pythons a lot. I think that you know, you have different reptile breeders that you know, may be friends with somebody else, and they breed, you know, let's say ball pythons or corn snakes or something like that, and you're on your friend's feed, and then all of a sudden you start to see some of the cool things that are out there. I think that the show had some factor in putting carpet pythons out there, and I think Reptile Report is probably another strong supporter of the fact that there is other species out there besides the species you're working with, you know what I mean? Whether it's ball pythons or even if it's carpet pythons, I think you know, I think carpet python community just in general is open to the more obscure python species. You know, when you're keeping the quote-unquote industry standards, I think that you may just get so involved with what you're working with that you don't necessarily see what's going on in the world around you, and species that you didn't even know about are there. I think olive pythons probably fall into that category. I bet you if you held olive pythons in your hand, though, I think your opinion would change. And that's what's sad about the whole
thing.
You know, is that, you know, until you have that species in front of you, you probably would have never gave it a second thought. But as soon as you have it in front of you, your whole opinion changes on about it. So, you know, I guess it's just up to us to you know, I think that that's where doing reptile shows and stuff like that has its advantages, where you kind of have to do your time. You may not sell a reptile at the show, but at least you're promoting the species or the genus or whatever you want to say, and you're putting it out there that, you know, somebody that may not have been exposed, because think about it, you know, I'm sure there was a point at some time where if you went to a reptile show, you're probably having more diversity at that show than some zoos have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of reptiles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So... that's my thoughts.
Anybody want to add?
I totally agree, and that's what that's why half of Rogue is huge to what it's built to. I mean, I got Max and Olives and White Lips and Scrubs and everything under the sun I can think about because I like those species and I want other people to like them because they're really cool. I mean, Eric, and the last time you were here, I should have just taken that Goldface White Lip and stuck it in his hands because I think you would have been blown away by him. And, you know, I'm going to make everybody try to handle or let me try to bring the our calmest blackface white lips because I want people to handle it. I want people to see it. It's a really, really cool animal that I don't think gets enough press just because it's not a morph. It's not anything. It's in. It's there. Whatever. It's really, really cool, I promise you. So it's one of those things that you're exactly right. I think the opinions change when you handle it. The problem is that the species isn't out there enough for people to really get an appreciation for it. And one of the reasons I was drawn to carpet python originally was because everybody and their sister has a ball python, and I don't want a ball python. I want something different. And that's where I landed on carpet python. So I do think that we should be hesitant that we don't want to get too big. Otherwise, we'll lose what makes us special. We're the kids hanging on the edge, not with the popular guys, because they suck. We're over here. So I like that idea.
Right.
Yeah, I like floating just under the radar, you know. it's kind of cool to be that that group, you know. I can't wait till I get
also
a Sabu
cool.
python. Then I'll really be floating right under the radar.
But Sabu's are so cool.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's
missing Sabu with my lashes.
That's a perfect example of a python species that just to me, again, you know, I sound like I contradict myself sometimes, but to me, there's nothing cooler than a normal Sabu python. You could put morphs out there and all this different shit. If it came in albino, I wouldn't give a shit. I wouldn't care because what's cool about that thing, they're perfect the way they are. You know what I mean?
So why don't you have some?
I'm working on it, my man. I'm working on it, you know. Time, space, money, you know. Money. But they're on the list. I definitely want to they're one of those ones that if I worked with any liaises, that would be the one that I would work with. Hands down, without a doubt, they would be in my collection.
I hate you for getting booked on the Max, dude. I love my Max.
You know, I think, Owen, I think your whole approach to, as much as everybody thinks that you're this rough scale python guy because you drool every time somebody mentions
it. I want them so bad.
I got to be honest. I think that you're going to get them, and your species that you're going to gravitate towards the most is going to be the white-lip pythons. Because whenever we talk, whenever we're discussing, you're always talking about white-lip pythons. And that's cool.
I absolutely love my white-lip pythons. The golds have the variety with the golds is ridiculous. You can have high golds, low golds, medium golds. It's gorgeous, and the blacks just blow you away. Ah,
now,
I love my white-lips.
I can't wait till you breed them because I want some.
Yeah,
we got a very, very good chance at both phases next year. Very good,
awesome.
Extremely good, awesome. Ridiculous good.
You know what? It's funny because I'm a big New Guinea guy. I love everything Papua New Guinea, and white lips are freaking badass. But I have to be honest.
Oh, they are.
I have to be honest. Just like you are with chondros, like chondros scare you, white lips scare me equally, which is funny because I'd be like, I can tell you all day that chondros are easy, man. They're the easiest snake I have to own and everything else. But at the same time, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but white lips scare the living hell out of me. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to get them.
I can tell you all day.
Yeah.
And I can tell you all day, you just have to do, the exact setup you would need for them to be fine, healthy, perfect.
Yeah.
I'm with you with that one, Zach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you with that. Because,
yeah,
there's just something about them that they're like, it's like taboo, you know? It's like, oh, man, I can really deal with this Halmahera scrub, but white lip python? I don't know.
All right, all right, all right, all right, all right. after we get some things settled, I'm bringing the both of you to Site B, and I'm putting a black phase in your hands, and then we're just going to shut up.
No, shut the hell up. It's not the fact that I don't think that they're cool. I'm just telling
you
that.
No, I'm just saying, you're going to be...
I know, but even at the fact that it's in my hand and I'm saying it's awesome, there's something that just, it's that,
it
that stereotype.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you're working with it, and I think it's good because the fact that you're passionate about that species is going to make you successful with them. So I hope that you don't ever not work with it because of
money or
frustration or whatever, because I think that they're the type of people that put those type of projects on the map, you know what I mean? And then get people to pay attention. So like when we were talking earlier about industry trends and all that kind of stuff, I think that to me, I'm going to make my projects a trend. If you like them, you like them. But I think if you stand behind your projects and you really, really are passionate about what you're doing, people are going to pay attention, man. It's just going to happen. They're just going to be like, oh, my God, did you see what Owen was doing? He's doing these white-lipped pythons. He just talks about them all the time. You know, you Steve Irwin it. That's what you do, man. You Steve Irwin it, you know?
Yeah, you got to make people think that this thing that you're grabbing is the most important, cool thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like really, it's just like a ring. Yeah.
Man, come on. It doesn't take a lot to convince somebody, especially reptile guys, to buy a snake, man. Honestly, come on.
No.
Like,
no.
You know what I mean? It doesn't take a lot. You just got to, like, tell them something's cool. If you tell them something's cool long enough, and if you're serious, you know, if you're honest about it, eventually they're going to believe you. It's just, it is, it's the way it is. You know, you can just say, no, these are awesome, man. You can put whatever price you want on whatever you're selling. You can say, no, this is so badass for this reason and this reason. And, you know, that's it. Eventually, after a certain amount of time, that's going to start catching on, man. Because this reptile industry is that, man. We're lots of sheep, man, lots of sheep, you know. You tell somebody something is cool and they believe it. You know, they don't go to find out for themselves. So
it's funny, Zach. You kind of did that with me and skinks. Never thought about them. And all of a sudden, you're just like, man, David, skinks are cool, man. Skinks are awesome. Look at this. At first, I was kind of skeptical. They're growing on me now, man. You pulled that little Jedi mind trick of whatever you want to call it.
Some kung fu, man. Skink kung fu. No, but see, it wasn't even... it's not even really convince you. It's more like just exposing you. I think that's the biggest thing, you know? It's exposing people to things that they've never seen before. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to like it too, man, because it's badass shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I like skinks because they're badass. You know, Dave's now starting to like them because what? They're badass. It's not because I told him that it's going to make him money or because I told him that it's an investment in a project or whatever. I just told him, man, they're cool, man. No matter how much they cost, they're cool. You know?
Right.
And man wants them now. Forget it.
Those are Gurnia, man. They're still freaking cool. They're like tiny little monitor lizards.
Oh, yeah. You
want that.
God, monitors.
See?
Or even like a radiated rat snake, man. Radiated rat snakes are one of the coolest species in the hobby. They're $40. Who cares, though? The Columbus Zoo used to have a huge enclosure of just like five, I just forgot their name, so my passion has exploded. I'm forgetting the names now. But they're so cool. They just ran around the enclosure zooming around. Why wouldn't anybody want to own that? You know?
You know what? This is my approach to the whole customer base and, you know, how to be active in the market or whatever. I'm not going to try to find customers. I'm going to make customers. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Good.
I'm not going to find them. I'm going to make them. I'm going to tell people how cool these things are. And you know, now guess what? When I have a nice, you know, group of skinks for sale, I don't know, maybe Dave will be knocking on my door.
Mm-hmm. Hey. I think that's kind of...
Make customers, man. That's how to do it. Make them.
Hmm.
Like, you're making a white lip customer over here, man. For real. I'm telling you, man. As soon as I see those things in person, I know I'm going to, like, totally put my wig.
Once I get captives, I think I'm going to have, like, you know, people going to be knocking down my door. But
I think that's what it
is.
That's another reason why I haven't made the jump. It's to, you know, we have to realize, I'm going to get an import. And, you know, a lot of people are saying
Both of our male black faces are captive bred, and that is helpful. And then one of our gold females is captive bred by one of our other gold females. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right, Zach, though, that, you know, and Owen, I think you do this with certain projects. I do this with certain projects when we're on here and we're talking about it. I think that people, just because we're talking about something, they just kind of like say, oh, man, that must be really cool. You know, think about like it's crazy. And, you know, I guess the trick is, though, is that when you get invested into a project, you just have to stick it through, man. You have to see it through.
Yeah.
You have to do it through and just, you know, try not to lose your focus. And that's kind of what I was saying last week. I was saying to Zach earlier is that, you know, when I got into this, I was focused like a laser beam on exactly what I wanted to do. And, you know, that always kind of was in the realm of working with pythons, carpets in particular, Morelia after that, and then working with all different species of pythons. But when you start to see Zach and his skinks, you know, that guy with the milk
jerk
that was next to me,
yeah,
you know, at the show,
that table.
I really, really dig him, but I have to stay focused on what I'm trying to do and what my end result is. But it's so cool to see that there's other things out there and just appreciate them. And eventually you're going to find that one project that really, really gets you going, man. You know, with me, it's carpet pythons. You know, I dig every single one type, anything, everything, mutt, mix, pure, locality, you know, whatever. They're just badass to me. They're the perfect python. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you can't, you know, just pay attention to what's going on outside of your world every once in a while. And I think that's very healthy for the herp community. To just take a wander every once in a while over into the lizard world, and maybe you'll learn a thing or two, and it might help you understand what you're keeping a little bit better because you have a different perspective now or a different mindset, or you may learn something different from, you know, how they're keeping. They're not really that much different in the long run. So I don't know. I think it's just a good thing to kind of be open-minded, but at the same time, see your projects through.
Makes sense.
So that's it.
It's like me and IJs, man. I wasn't into IJs until I saw your collection of IJs, man. It baffled me that these things are so cool, yet I totally overlooked them. You know, I was actually kind of pissed off. I'm like, are you serious? The coolest carpet, in my opinion, in the freaking world.
Yeah.
The cheapest chips nobody gives a damn about. And yet I followed, you know, everybody else's advice, and I got this, and I got this morph, and I got this. And, you know, paying attention to what everybody else told me what was cool rather than really looking around and finding what I really like, you know. And that's why, you know, and again, you know, you open that door by showing that to me. And now, you know, IJs. So, I mean, you know, again, I guess it goes back to what my point is, you know, make those customers, man. Make them.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see. Maybe I'll be bitter after about a year from now. I'm like, okay, so these coastals, all these jungles, all these snow. And then I'll be like, oh, screw it, man. This market sucks. Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? But, you know, as of right now, I don't have that bitter old Herper kind of mentality going on. So
I think one of the things, and we didn't really hit on this question, but one of the things that you have to think about is
And Dave, this kind of falls into what you were saying a little bit earlier. I think the responsible thing to do is that if you're going to breed, you should be breeding with the mindset that you're going to be sitting on those babies forever, possibly. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
Like,
yep.
Yeah, you can't think that, you know, oh, well, I'm going to get this and I'm going to get that and I'm going to put them together and, you know, 4 days after they hatch out of the egg, everybody's going to be knocking down my door to get them. That would be incorrect.
Wrong.
Because a lot of people are really, really good at breeding snakes, understanding snakes, totally nerding out when it comes to snakes and everything about them. However, they don't have an ounce of business skill at all or customer service at all.
No.
You know, and they can't figure out why they can't sell the snake or why nobody cares about it and they're the only ones that care about it. You have to make people care about it, you know. Get your voice out there. Post it up. Beehoff the hell out of it, man.
Beehoff that shit, yep.
So, anyway, we're almost out of time for the overtime. So,
holy crap, quickly end it.
Yeah. So we still have some topics to hit on, so I guess we're going to have to do a round two at some point. So
damn it. I mean, oh,
you're looking
good.
Forward to that.
Next time, though, get Josh Easter on there, so it can be 4 MIers against 1 AIer. I think that would be an entertaining topic ever.
Hey, you can all suck it. I don't give a damn. Next question.
Yeah. Right. Actually, honestly, Dave, he probably would give me more shit than Owen.
Yes, he would.
Ether off this thing. Let's
Ether
not do
would
that.
Probably give me more shit than any three of you guys. But I'm up for the debate, man. I'm up for it. I'm ready. I got the guns loaded. Passion meter, 300
plus. Man, got the shit.
Bring it on.
Passion.
Yeah,
oh,
that's right. I'll just keep saying passion until the guy's drunk and then just push him over.
God.
Anyway, give your shout outs real quick and then we'll call it. So let's start with you. Hey, Dave, you got a new website. Throw it out there.
Oh, okay. It's www.kellyherp.com. My last name is K-E-L-L-E-Y. Remember that second E.
Okay. Got it. All right, check it out. Zach, what do you got going on? You got some babies coming out. Go for it.
Oh, yeah. I got some coastals here. I got some tiger jags, coastal, you know, all type of stuff. And then I got my jungles coming up, so if anybody's interested, you can catch me at Dark Side Exotic. And that's on Facebook, so hit me up there, man.
Okay. All right, I'll throw the links all over on the Morelia Python Radio Facebook page, so go over there. One of the things that I talked about with Josh Easter is we should have a little spot where after the show we can go and talk about maybe topics and everybody can put their 2 cents in what they thought. So I'm going to throw it up tonight. So after you listen to the show, it's probably going to take you a couple days to digest the info to the Facebook page. And you know, get involved in our conversation. So, yeah, it's the Morelia Python Radio Facebook page, and, you know, follow us over there. I guess as far as I'm what I have is don't forget Morelia Python's forum. That's www.moreliapythons.com. Go over there and sign up, become a member. Very cool community. You can check out I don't throw this out often enough. You can check out our past episodes in a couple of different ways. One, you can go over and subscribe on iTunes. Or two, you can go straight over to the Blog Talk Radio, which is blogtalkradio.com/MoreliaPythonRadio. And you can listen to all the past episodes on there, which we're almost coming up on our 100th episode coming up. And we'll be 2 years. 2-year anniversary coming up.
Oh, my God.
So,
who said,
yeah.
All right.
And who said you couldn't do this for that long? Who said that?
Many people. Many people.
Yes. So we've proved them wrong.
Damn straight.
That's right. I want to throw a shout out. Make sure the Arboreal Symposium, which we are a sponsor of, is on August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. It's going to be a hell of a weekend. It's going to be a lot of cool pythons, boas, arboreal species. You coming out the yin yang over at this place, and it's actually a good opportunity to see some of, like we talked about earlier, to see some of the species that maybe you've never seen in person. Like for me, I cannot wait to see a Bolin's python. I am so excited about actually seeing one in person and holding it. I mean, this is the, you know, the top, the pinnacle of the Morelia world for me. So, you know, I can't wait to actually to check it out, see it in person, because I know I'm going to be blown away. But, yeah, you can go over and check out the website, www.arborealsymposium.com.